Good evening.
Good evening.
And thank you very, very much for being here tonight. My name is Marta Garcia. Buenas tardes. I'm with the National Hispanic Media Coalition, also represent in New York City the National Latino Media Council. Thanks again for being here, and especially our two commissioners, Commissioner Adelstein and Commissioner Cobbs from the Federal Communications Commission. And of course, the wonderful group of panelists that we have this evening, and I guarantee you it's going to be an exciting and impactful one. But before we move ahead with the program, because we're here to make very short speeches, and rather we're here to listen to your voices, I want to ask to everyone to please take a moment to turn off your cell phones. Yes, we can't have those ringing right here as we speak. Thank you very much for doing that. I just want to say very special thanks to the number of people who have made this possible, in addition to our organizing efforts. Definitely the National Association of Hispanic Journalists is one of the key organizers, along with the National Institute for Latino Policy. And also, we want to thank those that without a doubt, we would not have been able to organize so many details that are involved in this, and that is Free Press, and we thank them dearly. All those volunteers that have been ushering and that have been guiding you around, absolutely and without a doubt, we're very, very grateful. I also want to give special thanks, particularly to CUNY and the City University of New York, the Senior Chancellor for University Relations and Secretary of the Board of Trustees, Jay Hedgerson, and Luz Jimenez, and who's from the Office of the University Relations. At Hunter College, the President, Jennifer Robb, and the Assistant Provost and Vice President, Vita Radonovic, who will, in a second, be here with us to give us her welcoming remarks. He's also External Affairs Coordinator, Taina, I'm sorry. We also want to thank Taina Barrero, who is the External Affairs Coordinator, who's been extraordinarily helpful as well. The Center for Estudios Puertorriqueños here at Hunter, who also, organized the reception that we just came from, and also our colleagues at Manhattan Neighborhood Network, and who, again, were just extraordinary in getting the word out. The special thanks also to Reach Hip Hop. You guys are there in the audience? Well, how about that? We're seeing in action. Common Cause, Media and Democracy Coalition, and the Prometheus Radio Project, who again made this possible. I want to quickly call to the stage Vita Rabinowitz, and I'm sorry, I practiced it, and there I went again, to the stage, who will give us the welcoming remarks. Vita?
Thank you, Martha. Good evening. On behalf of President Jennifer Redd, I am delighted to greet members of the National Hispanic Media Coalition, the National Latino Media Council, the National Association of Hispanic Journalists, the National Institute for Latino Policy in partnership with Free Press, Federal Communications Commissioners Jonathan Adelstein and Michael Cobbs, members of the media, and other honored guests of Hunter College. As members of the largest college in the largest urban public university in the nation, we at Hunter College are immensely proud to host this public hearing on diversity in the broadcast industry and to offer the public an opportunity to discuss the media's treatment of people of color. As many of you know, Hunter College is a minority-serving institution. Well over one-third of our degree-seeking freshmen come from underrepresented minority groups, and almost 22% of all freshmen are of Hispanic descent. We are home to CENTRO, the renowned Center for Puerto Rican Studies. Hunter students come from 150 different countries and speak almost 100 different languages. 34% of our incoming freshmen are born outside of the U.S. And 66% of our new freshmen speak a language other than English at home. A big part of our mission is now and has always been preparing our students from all over the world to succeed academically, professionally, socially, and personally in our society. Given our student body, we cannot fulfill that mission without an abiding appreciation of and respect for diversity, including ethnic and language diversity. At Hunter, diversity is truly the air that we breathe, and cultural awareness and cultural competence are major goals of our education. It is the duty of great institutions to facilitate and stimulate discussions on the great issues of their times, no matter how sensitive or controversial. It is right that we provide a forum tonight to discuss such matters as the rights of people to receive and exchange ideas, the powerful influences of the media on our culture, the forces of media consolidation, and the low levels of media ownership among women and people of color. How do we balance the right to free speech and exchange of ideas, the demands of a competitive marketplace, and the needs and concerns of local communities? These are just some of the big issues we'll be grappling with here tonight. I want to thank you for coming to Hunter College over these important issues, and I hope you enjoy your evening. Thank you for having me.
Guess what, guys? I pronounced her name correctly.
Okay.
Now I want to introduce Ivan Roman, who is the executive director of the National Association of Hispanic Journalists. Ivan, who will do the intro.
Good evening, everyone. I want to welcome all of you here on behalf of the National Association of Hispanic Journalists, an organization of 2,000 members from all types of media in the country. We're here to discuss possible media ownership rule changes that will have a tremendous impact on the information and the news and entertainment that our society receives. We at NHJ see the effects of media consolidation firsthand. We hear of layoffs and buyouts all the time. Just this week, 65 members of the Cleveland Plain Dealer staff was offered a buyout and took a buyout offer. And just today we hear news of 700 people who will be laid off at NBC Universal. We still don't know if any of these are affected, our news divisions are affected with this. But basically this phenomenon results in increased lack of diversity of viewpoints, fewer reporters actually covering the news, digging for stories. We're also concerned about minority ownership. We asked the National Telecommunications and Information Agency to conduct a study on the status of minority ownership, a study they had not done since December of 2000, and they had just forgotten to do. Of course, they said no this year, which shocked us, and just shows how they have abdicated their responsibility to monitor and foster greater minority ownership in media. So our friends at Free Press, spurred by this no that was given to NHJ, decided to do the study themselves, and they documented how the impact of media consolidation on minority ownership. Of 1,400 television broadcast stations in the country, 67 stations are owned by women, that's 5%. Minorities own 44 stations, that's 3.26%. Blacks own 18 stations, that's 1.3%. Hispanics own 15 stations, that's 1.1%. Asians own 6 stations, that's less than 1%. And the only station owned by a person of color in New York area is an Asian station, WMBC, which is a UHF station. Faced with these results, NHJ reiterated and strengthened our opposition to media ownership rule changes that will result in fewer jobs, less quality coverage, fewer voices, fewer viewpoints, and fewer owners of color. We've documented the inverse with NHJ's Parity Project, which shows that having more people of color as owners and in decision-making positions results in better and more inclusive coverage. Our network brownout study released today, as some of you may have seen an executive summary which is out in the front, helps document how the lack of viewpoints in newsrooms affect coverage. Of 12,600 stories that appeared on ABC News, CBS News, NBC News in all of 2006, 105 stories, or less than 1%, were stories about Latinos or included Latinos. In essence, we're basically invisible, except when we're highlighted as criminals. That's what the study found. As an example, the story about Alberto Gonzalez being appointed Attorney General, in all of those stories, not one Latino was interviewed for those stories to get their opinion, to see how it affected Latinos, what Latinos thought about it, how it affects Latinos in politics, not one. And that was just an easy, like, sort of like, you could say, kind of an obvious thing to do. They didn't even do that. So, we at NHJ are opposed to further rule changes and deregulation, which has a real impact on how we are seen and heard and the level of respect afforded to us in this society. That's why, as Latinos and journalists, we must stand against these changes. Let's all remember that the deadline for public comments to the FCC about proposed rule changes is December 21st. And you can do this by going to www.stopbigmedia.com. We expect to see you there. And I now leave you with, once again, I want to thank you all for coming. I want to thank the volunteers who really helped get this together for us. And I want to now leave you with Alex Nogales, President and CEO of the National Hispanic Media Coalition, who will serve as moderator on your first panel. Thank you.
Buenas tardes a todos. I'm going to put this a little bit higher for myself here. We have a lot of work to do this evening. Welcome again. I am Alex Nogales, the President and CEO of the National Hispanic Media Coalition. Also the Secretariat for the National Latino Media Council, which is a much larger umbrella organization consisting of 17 of the largest civil rights advocacy organizations across the nation on Latino. Let me tell you what you can expect this evening so you'll know exactly what we're going to do. In a moment, I'm going to introduce the commissioners who will come up and give us their comments. Thereafter, what I will do is introduce our panelists. We have two panels today. I'll introduce the first panel. They will have 5 minutes apiece to give us their testimony. And then I will come to you, the public. We have two microphones. And I will ask certain people to come up first, elected officials and so forth. We will take a testimony for half an hour, and then we will go to the second panel. Is that agreeable to everybody? Muchas gracias. First of all, let me point out that all of the five commissioners of the Federal Communications Commission were invited to be with us this evening. And of course, three of them did not show up. The two that always show up, and I have to emphasize this, are the two Democrats of the FCC. And they are there are two very loyal, very caring, very professional individuals who will give us much service. And they're here this evening to take testimony from all of us. So our concerns are going to be on the public record. This will go on the public record. It is my pleasure to introduce to you Commissioner Cox. And Commissioner Adelstein immediately to his left. So again, I will ask him to say a few words. And Commissioner Adelstein, if you will come up first.
Thank you, Alex, for that fine introduction, and all of the organizers here that did so much work that Vita listed that put their heart and soul into making this possible. And of course, I want to thank all of you for being here. It's a fantastic turnout we have this evening, which I think is a testament to how important this issue is to this community. And we're really here for you, so I'm glad that you came here to share with us. Me alegra estar con ustedes en Nueva York. It's a pleasure to be here in New York. It's wonderful to participate in such a democratic exercise of this community because the FCC doesn't always do this. Historically, we haven't gone out, but I think we should, and find out what people are thinking around the country. We're not. Especially great for you to come out during game 7 of the divisional championship. I know it's especially hard for Betty Elms to appreciate her, a huge Mets fan. And the thing is that we didn't plan it this way, you know, the rain delay caused it, so don't blame us. But I can't think of a better way to really determine the public interest than to go out to Washington and find out what the public is thinking about these issues. Listen to your views about what's happening in the local media and how well it's serving you, and what effects the wave of consolidation that we've seen has had on you. Because unlike the powerful media companies in Washington, you don't have an army of highly paid lobbyists that are out there to represent your interests. But then again, why should you? You really should need paid lobbyists in Washington because supposedly that's the job of the FCC. But of course, that would only be the case if we truly carried out the law, which requires us to serve the public interest and not the huge media giants who seek to profit. I think it's unfortunate in recent years that the FCC has failed to protect your interests. We've forgotten that public airways belong to the American people. Public interest is paramount, not the special interests of media companies. We've forgotten that the ownership of broadcast media is fundamentally about our democracy. It's about the music that we listen to on the radio. It's about the news, information, entertainment that we watch on television that our families are exposed to. And these days, we hear a lot about the importance of spreading freedom and democracy around the world. But what about improving the quality of freedom and democracy right here in the United States? The center for so much, the center for business, for finance, for fashion, for medicine, literature, art, entertainment, media, and culture. And as the media capital of the world, the nation's largest media market at the same time, it's the home of one of the most diverse populations in the United States and really anywhere in the world. There's perhaps no other city that's shaped our national identity and language and culture more than New York. For example, it was only 30 years ago that this city created the music and culture of hip-hop.
Yeah!
Hip-hop's not just the artistic and musical expression of urban America, it's a cultural expression of generations of Americans in the East, West, South, Midwest, all parts of America now are benefiting from that which started right here in New York. And that's the kind of localism that we want to encourage. If local artists don't get heard on local radio, if that kind of music doesn't get its start somewhere and get a niche, how can it spread around the country and then around the world? Now, on top of New York's national significance in that sense, it really does come back to localism, what's happening here and how that spreads around the world. The significance of the residents of New York City and the surrounding area deserve quality local music, quality local news, and quality public affairs information. Local musicians and artists deserve to have their music played on radio stations during times, of course, when people actually wake to hear them, not just from 5 to 6 in the morning. Members of minority groups should be owners, not just consumers of broadcast media outlets in the city. The minority communities deserve to be portrayed on the evening news in a positive, non-stereotypical manner. We hear from the media giants and some that argue that broadcasting, like television and radio, is no longer important because of competing distribution platforms like the internet and cable and MP3 players and all the competition they're facing. But despite all of those new outlets, study after study has shown that broadcasting is still the dominant source of not just local news and information, but also of entertainment programming, so much of which comes here out of New York. In the 2004-05 season, for example, it was broadcast television that had the top 255 highest-rated programs on TV, and all but a handful of the top 500 were on broadcast TV. And in radio, the two satellite companies, people talk about competition, and I know that Sirius is based here in New York, and I'm proud to say I'm a subscriber myself, but I'm one of only 11 million, and there's over 200 million people that listen to radio on a weekly basis. So there is a huge voice that they hold, and that's what we need to make sure there's a diversity on that voice, because they have such a powerful impact over our culture, over political events, over the ideas that inform our public discourse. The broadcast industry still produces, disseminates, ultimately controls news, information, and entertainment programs that inform the discourse and the debate in this country, and that is so essential to decisions that we make in a democracy. But when you look at today's media landscape, we see hyper-commercialism, we see rampant homogenization, we see an unforgivable lack of women and minority ownership, employment, and participation. We heard some of the statistics earlier, but they bear repeating, that women make up over half of the population, but yet less than 5% of the TV station ownership. Racial and ethnic minorities make up 30% of the country, a third of the country, but yet they own less than 3.3% of all TV stations. African Americans own 1.3%, Latinos 1.1%. There's something wrong with this picture. The media don't reflect the diversity that is the strength of this country. And as fewer and fewer media companies gain more and more control over the means of distributing these ideas, fewer small businesses and fewer women, African Americans, Latinos, Asians, Native Americans, and all other minorities can use the public airwaves to contribute to our national experience in ways that reflect their contributions to America. That's simply not acceptable in a country like this. When it comes to local newscasts, we often see that they're dominated by sensationalism, by crime stories, little useful information, and even less government and election information that people can use to make decisions. But today, of course, we heard that NBC is slashing its budget by $750 million, including major cuts in its news operations. So both TV on a local and national level are cutting news staff, cutting reporters, fewer writers, fewer producers, those that are left have to do more with less. And so you see the news quality is suffering. If it bleeds, it leads, is what we see. That might be good for ratings in the bottom line, but it's not good for our democracy. It's not good when it comes to covering the positive aspects of what's happened in our communities. When in-depth coverage of local and national elections disappear, when real investigative journalism is replaced with video news releases, when local news becomes a series of crime stories punctuated by traffic and weather. Now, for example, one study found that community public affairs programming accounted for less than one-half of 1% of all local TV programming, compared to 14.4% for paid programming, like infomercials for ad ventures. So you may be getting tight abs, but I'm afraid we're getting a flabby democracy. Cookie-cutter approach to news programming has resulted in the loss of localism, the loss of diversity, and a really unfortunate amount of homogenization. As we heard at our hearing on the other side of the country in L.A. from the Writers Guild West president, homogenization is good for Mel, but it's bad for ideas. Radio is a clear example. Today, a lot of stations seem to play the same core songs over and over again. It's almost as if the national formats have taken over, and the local angle doesn't get heard anymore. In some stations, there's no DJ left anymore. It's all just voice track. Automation allows owners to record shows weeks in advance and give the illusion that it's a local program. Well, today we heard some great news from New York Attorney General Elliot Spitzer that he reached the first deal with a radio broadcaster. CBS Radio agreed to a settlement in the Paola investigation that he's involved in. His investigation in the radio and record industry that's uncovered so many stations, a lot of them here in New York, that have engaged in practices that are more and more a part of the corporate and business model than any time in history. I'd like to say that Spitzer's investigation has uncovered not just a smoking gun, but an arsenal of smoking guns. When a station makes programming decisions on the basis of payola, it may make a short-term gain, but in the long run, the consumer loses out, because listeners don't get to hear the freshest music. Local artists can't make a go of it and get their creative genius on the radio. The vitality of radio is sapped by payola. So it's not only against the law, it's really against the long-term health of the radio industry, as well as listeners all across the country. Well, at least we're doing something about it here in New York. You should be proud of your Attorney General. I just want to let you know that I, unfortunately, tonight have a competing commitment that requires me to slip out of here in a little bit, but I'm going to listen to as much as I can. And then I've got a very capable staff of Rudy Brioche, who's going to remain here to hear each and every one of you and report back. He happens to be one of the leading attorneys in minority ownership law in the United States. And he has a fantastic background. He used to serve as a counsel to NAACP and also to U.S. Senator Lautenberg from neighboring New Jersey. But best of all, he hails from Brooklyn. So he comes these days. My friends, it's really all of you, the American people who own the public airwaves. Media ownership's about the power to control your airwaves, the airwaves that you've permitted the FCC to license to broadcasters in exchange for their obligation to serve the public interest. Well, I think we got to get a little bit more out of that equation for all of you. We want to hear your ideas about how that ought to be done. We want to hear about whether or not we've done our job here in New York, whether broadcasters are doing their job here in New York, whether your local newspapers, radio, and television stations reflect the diversity of people and what's happening here in this great city, the greatest city in the world. Thank you so much for having us. And we look forward to hearing from you.
Thank you very much. Now we have another giant that is protecting the interests of the consumer, of minorities as a whole, and that is, of course, Commissioner Carlos.
Good evening, my friends. A lot of people worked to put this together. I won't take the time to repeat everybody's names, but I want to thank everybody who was a part of this meeting. Thank all of our panelists. Thank each and every one of you for coming out tonight. This is, to me, the most important meeting taking place in New York City today. Now, this is an important city, I know that, and there are lots of important meetings going on here every day. So why do I say that? I say it because of what is at stake here. Our media is at stake. And our media, when you stop to think about it, is so all-encompassing and so precious. It's how, outside of our strictly personal spheres, we speak to each other as fellow citizens. It's how we inform each other, learn from each other, entertain each other, how we govern ourselves, and really how we come to know ourselves as individuals and as members of a larger society. Media is the most powerful industry, the most powerful business in America, bar none. I don't think anybody finishes a close second in influence. And how that power is used has a lot to do with your life and mine, a lot to do with our country's life each day, every day. And if we're smart about it, our media will reflect and will nourish the genius and the creativity and the diversity of our country and all of our diverse communities. And if we're not so smart about it, the wrong media environment will hold us back and dumb us down and deflect us from democracy's many pathways. That's what brings us here tonight. This city is such an important crossroads for media and finance and the arts. New York City is about incredible multitudes. It's multitudes of races and religions and traditions and perspectives and stories. Could there be any better place in the world to engage in a public dialogue about media consolidation and the future of our media? I don't believe so. Not only is the place perfect, but the timing of this meeting is perfect too, and that's because the FCC is in the midst of a hugely important proceeding right now to decide what the future of our media, our TV, our radio, our newspapers, our cable, even our internet, are going to look like for a long, long time to come. A little history just to set the stage for our discussion. 3 years ago, under then FCC Chairman Michael Powell and over the objections of my good friend Commissioner Adelstein and myself, the FCC severely cut back, really eviscerated is a better word, the rules that were meant to check big media's seemingly endless appetite for more consolidation. It passed new rules which have allowed a single media giant to own in a single market up to 3 television stations, 8 radio stations, the cable system, the cable channels, even the internet portal, and the local newspaper, which in most cities in the United States of America is already a monopoly. And the agency did all of that behind closed doors and without seeking meaningful input from the American people. Can you imagine that? Authorizing a sea change in how news and entertainment are produced and presented over the people's airwaves without even involving the people who own those airwaves and who depend so heavily upon them. It was a near disaster for America. Thankfully, citizens rose up across the land. They sent nearly 3 million protests to the Federal Communications Commission. I'm Congress rose up too, and then a federal court sent those rules back to the FCC saying they were badly flawed and they needed to be reworked. That was good, and anybody that doesn't believe that citizen action can have an effect should just revisit what happened there. We checked those rules. You checked those rules from going into effect. It was concerned citizens at work, and it was a citizen-consumer victory. But here's the reality check now. We're right back at square one, and it's all up for grabs again. And if we're going to have a better result this time around, doing something positive for media democracy, it's going to be because of more citizen action and more input from folks like you. So this time we need to make it an open public process instead of hiding in our office in Washington like the majority did in 2003. This time let all the commissioners come to New York. I wish they were all here tonight. And let all the commissioners get out across America and find out what's happening in the real world beyond that beltway that they bemoan so much but seem to love staying behind so much. So let's begin our discussion then. Begin with that simple reminder. It's all of us who own the airwaves. There's not a broadcaster, a business, a special interest, and any industry that owns one airwave in the United States of America. They belong to you, they belong to me, and my friends, now is the time to assert our ownership rights. Too many stations are absentee owned and operated from afar under business plans that do not do justice to the public interest. And serving the public interest means the interest of every segment of our society. How can it be good when we see fewer and fewer opportunities for Latinos, African Americans, and other minorities in our media? You've heard the statistics a number of times tonight. I'm not going to go through them again. It was 30 years ago the FCC put out a report that said it is apparent that there is a dearth of minority ownership in the broadcast industry. And 30 years later, there still is, and it's not getting any better, and it is more shameful now than it was 30 years ago. Ownership matters. More than that, I think ownership rules. So should we really be surprised, given the sad state of minority media ownership, when the coverage and characterization of minorities in our media are so distorted? Should we really be surprised that issues of importance to our many diversity communities don't get the attention they deserve? Should we really be surprised that creative artists and entrepreneurs from local diversity groups can't get airtime, can't get a business deal, can't find a job, and can't find an opportunity to be part of America's media culture? Journalism experts who have studied this problem have found that only a handful of stories feature Latinos, and when they do, it's most often a story about crime, terrorism, or immigration. Local TV news is four times more likely to show a mugshot during a crime story if the suspect is African American. And we hear that in a city with as rich and diverse a music scene as New York, popular local artists struggle to get airtime because big station owners are tied up in pay-for-play payola schemes.
That's right.
You know, this isn't rocket science. This is about doing something and doing something now. And until we do something targeted specifically to correct the shameful shortfall of minority media ownership, our communication sectors will continue to underserve millions of Americans who are the core of our country's wonderful diversity. You know, New York's strength and America's strength is its diversity. Some people talk about, oh, this diversity is really a problem to be overcome. Diversity is America's strength. Diversity is what gives us a leg up in this 21st century. And our media have an obligation to reflect that diversity, and they have an obligation to nourish that diversity. And it's a job that is nowhere near getting done. Let me just conclude by saying that this issue of media consolidation has been my most important priority since I went to the commission 5 years ago. We got a lot of big issues on the table there. But I understand that other people, some of you in this audience, have other issue priorities. And goodness knows there are huge issues out there that we need to be concerned about. Issues of peace and war, of finding and keeping a job, getting health care for our families, educating our kids, the list goes on and on and on. And these issues may trump everything else, but here's what I tell people. Even if the future of our media is not your number one issue, you better think about making it your second issue. And that's because Americans get their input and develop their views about all of those other issues that I just mentioned through the funnel and through the filter of big media. Now, if you're okay with that, fine. But if you think that just maybe these other issues would fare a little better in a more open and a diverse and a competitive environment than they fare in a closed world of ever more media concentration, then you need to make this your issue and you need to act on it. We have a steep hill to climb to get through this proceeding, to check new rules, and then to move forward in building media democracy in this country. But what I have seen around this country, and Jonathan and I have been to meetings in every corner of the land, gives me hope, because people understand this issue. You know, Michael Powell sat there at the FCC and he thought, oh, people don't really care about the overlap of radio signals and, they don't care about how many outlets one broadcaster can own. Let me tell you, they understand when a little agency in Washington, in secret, decides to change the way that people's airwaves are used. Not only do they understand it, they're downright proprietary about it, and they can get awfully damn mad about it, and that's what happened last time. And I see that happening this time. This is not a partisan issue. This is not Republican versus Democrat. It is not liberal versus conservative. It is not red state versus blue state. It is a grassroots, all-American issue that affects every single one of us. And if we all get involved, I will be happy to take my chances with a good sense of the American people. And if you and I get this right, at the end of this debate, finally, we will be able to enjoy airwaves of, by, and for the American people. That's called media democracy. I think it's worth fighting for. Let's fight.
For those of you who have not spoken to Commissioner Levinson, you will know that he is also Spanish speaking. Para que vean. Two things. First of all, Marta Garcia has informed me that there are over 350 people in attendance. Congratulations to all of you for being here. And number two, those of you that know Angelo Falcón van a saber qué tan ocurrente que es. He's just informed me that we're 6 minutes behind schedule. Let me introduce our panel. And again, you will remember that they will have 5 minutes apiece to speak. I will stay up here to make sure that more or less we're at the same time. First of all, we have Mary Ellen. Mary Ellen, espérame. Berlanino. What beautiful name you have. She is Vice President and General Manager of the CW11 here in New York. Next to her, we have Arlene Davila, PhD Professor of Anthropology and American Studies from New York University. Welcome. And then next to her, we have Juan Gonzalez, columnist, New York Daily News, very well-known person here in our community. And then we have Coach Willie May, who's a sports anchor and morning sea host at 97.7 YOM in Boston. Welcome to all of you. And we will start with Mary Ellen. And remember, folks, that some folks are not going to have the same ideas and the same philosophy that we will have. It doesn't matter. They're here, and we will listen to them patiently and with all candor and also with all courtesy and respect. So, Betty, you're on.
I'm the Vice President and the General Manager of WPIX, the CW11 here in New York. We are a Tribune broadcasting station. Since I am the sole representative of free over-the-air broadcast television here tonight, I hope the fact that I've spent my entire career in broadcasting will lend some expertise and credibility to my remarks. I started my career at an entry-level position as a sales assistant and have held 4 previous positions prior to my appointment as general manager in 2000. Believe it or not, that makes me the longest ranking individual in my position here in New York. I'm under the impression that the topic of this hearing is to discuss media consolidation and its effect on programming, employment, and ownership of broadcast properties as those areas specifically pertain to people of color. My role tonight is to enter that discussion as it pertains to broadcasting. The New York DMA contains 23 over-the-air television stations, which are owned and operated by 18 different owners. Four of those stations are Spanish language stations. There are 73 radio stations in this market with 43 different owners, and there are over 40 daily newspapers serving New Yorkers in about six different languages. There are also three free daily papers, AM New York and Metro, which are published in English, and OI, which is in Spanish. 89% of New Yorkers subscribe to cable, and the combined cable and satellite penetration is approximately 94%. My cable service, Cablevision, offers packages that range from 32 stations up to 251. Oh, and let's not forget the internet. According to Pew Internet and American Life Project, 73% of Americans use the internet today. Therefore, it's not surprising that you pick New York, the New York market, to discuss diversity. It is the most diverse market in the country. What is surprising, and rather alarming, however, is the SEC's potential attack on free over-the-air broadcasting. A change in the current cross-ownership rule could further accelerate the demise of free broadcasting. Crippling the free press will only accelerate the power of pay television. Today, 23 television stations deliver 49% of the viewership. 20 years ago, 9 television stations delivered 100% share of the viewership. It gets tougher and tougher to compete with pay television. Cable operators enjoy a double revenue stream, and therefore it shouldn't be surprising that Monday Night Football, 25 New York Mets games, and 29 New York Yankees games have all recently moved over to pay television. Just a couple years ago, they were all available to the public for free. And yesterday, it was announced that both the American League and National League Divisional Series, as well as one Major League Championship Series, will migrate over to pay television. That means that potentially 6% of New Yorkers will not be able to see their hometown teams in postseason play. That 6%, however, is not evenly distributed throughout the market. For instance, only 65% of Brooklyn is wired for cable, and yet 90% of Nassau County subscribes to cable. Boroughs such as Brooklyn, Staten Island, the Bronx and Queens, which fall far below the market average, could potentially be cheated out of Mets and possibly Yankees playoffs next year. Yes, I'm predicting that the Mets will definitely get there again next year. Under current FCC rules, Cablevision, which owns 54%, controls 54% of the cable market, and Time Warner, which controls 27% of the market, can own multiple programming channels, enjoy two sources of revenue, subscription and advertising dollars, and yet there are no regulatory barriers barring a pay cable service from owning a local newspaper. Let me illustrate. Time Warner owns cable systems here in Manhattan, as well as CNN, CNN Headline News, the local news channel New York One, HBO, TBS, TNT, Cinemax, and publishes Time, Fortune, People, and many other periodicals. And they are free to buy the New York Times, the New York Post, the Daily News, or Newsday without any FCC review. Yet a free over-the-air broadcaster like Tribune could potentially be barred from cross-ownership in the future. That's rather interesting when you consider the fact that WPIX was born from the company's newspaper, the Daily News, in 1948. In fact, our call letters actually represent the paper's slogan at the time, New York's Picture Newspaper. But Tribune sold the paper in 1991 and purchased Times Mirror in 2000. At that time, Times Mirror owned Newsday and OI. Since its co-ownership of assets, Tribune has transformed the Spanish language paper, OI, into a free daily paper which reaches 60,000 Spanish-speaking New Yorkers on a daily basis. And we've expanded its distribution to two other major Hispanic markets, Los Angeles and Chicago. And most recently, in 2003, we launched the first free daily newspaper in New York, AM New York, which provides over 350,000 New Yorkers with free access to news. In other words, Tribune backed a start-up free paper in the most competitive market in the country to compete against paid papers, including one of our own. Without the backing of all the company's New York assets, this might not have been possible. Yet, because of this cross-media collaboration, we are able to distribute the paper free of charge at subway stations, bus stops, and apartment buildings. This intercompany collaboration has yielded tremendous benefits for our consumers. A standalone operation like WPIX would not have been able to report live from Iraq as the war was breaking out. However, Newsday reporters equipped with video phones brought all the action and emotion directly to our viewers. I could give you countless other examples of news collaboration, but let me share one that we're most proud of. In 2004, we broadcast a series of reports in tandem with the Newsday investigation on assisted living facilities on Long Island. One of the key findings was that 127 elderly residents had wandered away from several facilities, and unfortunately, seven of them died. We learned that since assisted living was a fairly new industry, it was not being regulated on a federal or state level. As a direct result of this Newsday WPIX investigation, Governor Pataki introduced legislation to regulate these types of facilities. This was the culmination of 8 months of investigation on Newsday's part, once again something that WPIX would not be equipped to do on our own. Additionally, we've also worked with them on long-form public affairs programs that examine issues such as childhood obesity, the importance of volunteerism, and the need for more political engagement on the part of our youth.
Just to name a few. Maybe you're 6 minutes, I'll give you one more.
By definition, we are a broadcaster, meaning we have to appeal to the masses, which in our case means over 21 million people in three different states and every conceivable ethnicity, and I think we do a pretty good job. The fact that there are big media companies behind most of the broadcasters allow us to report live from Iraq, stream breaking news on our websites, schedule debates for political candidates, cover local sporting events and community events, televise parades, celebrate diversity with programs and spots highlighting celebrations such as Hispanic Heritage Month and Black History Month, schedule PSAs that draw attention to the needs of local charities, and initiate station events that support food, toy, and co-drives and raise money for communities in need. At WPIX, we have raised over $7.6 million for our Care for Kids Foundation and given them to local charities in this community. And the Tribune New York Foundation, in tandem with Newsday, has raised over $3.5 million and given them out as well. It's this commitment to public service, and therefore it's not surprising that Tribune was recognized in Hispanic media business for being one of the top 50 companies for Hispanics in both 2005 and 2006. And I'm proud to say that at WPIX, we embrace the sentiment we reflected on our air, where 50% of our full-time on-air talent is comprised of persons of color, and well over 30% of our overall staff is made up of minorities. We have an employment outreach program that routinely disseminates our job openings to 91 different organizations, including 21 that specialize in minority recruitment. Our program schedule reflects the diverse programming. We have a live interpreter translating our late newscast into Spanish every night, and in partnership with the Spanish language radio station Guado for a simulcast of our Mets game. So in conclusion, I hope I've been able to showcase some of the many benefits that the newspaper broadcast combination can promote. I share these examples with you as a free, over-the-air broadcaster that recognizes the threats to our business. One of them, however, is not the lack of diversity in broadcast television. Instead, we should be working together to save our airwaves from monopolies like Nielsen and the rising cost of subscription services. Let me also remind you that in 2003, the Federal Third Circuit Court wrote, and I quote, "The Commission's decision not to retain a ban on newspaper broadcast cross-ownership is justified and is supported by record evidence." The court went on to write that newspaper broadcast combinations can promote localism and that a blanket prohibition on newspaper broadcast combinations is not necessary to protect diversity. As a person with 26 years of experience in this industry, I could not agree more. Thank you.
Thank you, Betty. introduce the first panel, but there's two other Eager Beaver panelists for the second panel. And Anthony Riddle is on my far, far left. And then I don't happen to know the gentleman next to him, but I have to assume that that is M1. Is that correct?
Very important.
Thank you very much for the correction. In any case, I'll go on to the second panelist, and like you, I'm very interested to know what a professor of anthropology is going to say to us. So, with that, let's go with Arlene Dagui.
Hi, I'm Arlene Dagui, and I'm a professor of anthropology, and I'm here with some of my students of Latino popular culture. Media conglomeration affects everyone. It diminishes diversity, limits the views and voices that are heard, and leaves us with prepackaged programs that are disconnected from local communities. Yet when Latinos are concerned, the situation is still more dire. The statistics are perhaps the greatest testament to this. My students were pretty amazed and outraged to learn that while Latinos make up for more than 14% of the national population, they own at best only 1% of the TV stations. It is a scandalous fact that Latinos have become relegated to being mere consumers, not producers or owners of media outlets in this country. There's a so-called Latino boom, but we're not profiting from this market. We remain practically shut out from ownership and from the top decision-making positions in the industry, from the ones that do pay the box and money. Since the passage of the Telecommunication Act of 1996, there has been even more consolidation within Spanish language Latino media industry, especially in radio. The result has been a decrease in local news and local affairs programming and an increase in nationally syndicated entertainment. What this means is that today, in the midst of the so-called boom in Hispanic marketing, Latinos remain second-class audiences more than ever. The regular channels don't address them in their full diversity, and neither do their so-called Hispanic media. It was troubling that in 2003, the FCC approved a merger of Univision and Hispanic Broadcasting Corporation. More deregulation has in fact exacerbated the monopoly of Univision over the Hispanic market, making it almost impossible for other voices to get access to this market. What is most amazing to me, however, is how the dominant monopoly of Univision, which is so recognized by everyone, by actors, by scholars, by students, by the average Joe on the street, remains so unchallenged. The argument that led to the merger of Univision and Hispanic broadcasting was the Spanish language market is simply a niche, like a jazz music radio station would be, of the general market, and hence that it should not be under public scrutiny and control. What is important for the commissioners to understand is that the Spanish language market is in fact its own sector and must be treated politically and economically as such. It is its own market because the Latino media are not used primarily by non-Spanish speakers. In fact, they're used by a particular sector, the Spanish dominant Latino with particular needs and interests. At the same time, Latinos are a very diverse population that varies along the lines of nationality, regional origin, citizenship status, language use, and race. Yet they're treated by Univision as one market. Via primarily imported programming from Latin America, the heroes and heroines of many shows are represented as primarily white, oftentimes primarily blonde and white, even though Latinos are primarily also people of color, black, or of indigenous background. Hardly any entertainment programming is produced with US-born Latino talent, writers and producers with Hispanic sensibilities of this country. For instance, my English dominant Latino students in my Latino popular culture who aspire to being actresses or writers will have a very hard time finding jobs in this white and European center world of Univision. I think it is important to have Spanish language, but the Latino market should not be equated with only this one segment. The Latino market is not homogeneous, it is far from it. However, it is increasingly homogenized through the power that Univision and other conglomerates have been allowed to wrest throughout the years, especially after the merger of Univision with Hispanic Broadcasting Corporation. The way consolidation in the Spanish language Latino market is threatens to undermine the potential, the competition of this sector, but also the role that it can play to mobilize and to inform the public, especially a public that still suffers from great economic, educational, and social inequities. From my discussion with Hispanic marketers, creatives, talents, and musicians, I know that people feel very frustrated with Univision's power. In fact, many media entrepreneurs are very upset for not playing in a fair playing field. That's why we don't see your ideas becoming part of the programming. That is why we lack U.S. Latino-focused children's programming or programming for our bilingual Latino youth. That's why we don't have public affairs programming in most Spanish language media. These types of offerings are typically excluded because they're not considered profitable by the owners of this media, and such diverse programming is being phased out of the airwaves or not developed altogether. But believe me when I tell you that there are hundreds of media creatives who would like to produce and star in this type of diverse shows, and there are thousands of audience members who will be delighted to see more diversity, especially their own racial heritage to represent it on Spanish language television. It is unfair to single them out. The content of mainstream media companies should also be questioned, and this is also true. However, Univision is in a very special position. They are the primary communications bridge between mainstream society and a primarily immigrant U.S. minority group that is hungry for inclusion, information, and self-expression. Latinos are not being served by a media giant that stifles competition and diversity. Latinos come in all colors and shapes, not only those defined by Univision. This is why it is important that the FCC listen to this community as we challenge media policies that allow such increased concentration to take place and refuse to allow the FCC or any other government entity to view Spanish language Latino media as simply one niche that can be exploited for profit without any consideration to the social needs of this community. The airways belong to all of us and should be used to serve this community in all of its depth, breadth, and diversity. The airways should serve Latinos, not simply profit from them. Thank you.
Gonzalez just had a lot to say to us. Now we go to our journalist and broadcaster, who will put us back on time. No pressure, Mike.
Good evening. My name is Juan Gonzalez. I'm a staff columnist at the New York Daily News, a past president of the National Association of Hispanic Journalists, and a professional reporter for nearly 30 years in our nation's commercial media. I thank Commissioner Copps and Commissioner Adelstein for their continued willingness to hear the concerns of the public as the FCC prepares yet again to overhaul the nation's broadcast ownership rules. A process that has the potential to make a bad situation far worse than anyone can imagine. I'm talking about the impact of media consolidation on news and information provided for and about the nation's fast-growing population of racial and ethnic minorities. Just this week, the United States reached a milestone, the 300 million population. More than a third of that population, more than 100 million people, trace their origin not to Europe, but to Africa, Asia, Latin America, or to the original indigenous people of the hemisphere. By 2050, that figure will surpass more than 50% of the total U.S. population. Yet our news media, especially our broadcast media, have failed in stunning fashion to reflect in their ownership, their employment, and their news coverage this rapidly changing reality. Worse, if present trends of media concentration continue, and if our government loosens even further its regulation of broadcast ownership rules, media ownership by racial minorities, in my opinion, will virtually disappear in the United States. We are in real danger of waking up one day with a de facto apartheid system. One where a small group of giant firms run almost exclusively by white investors and managers control the production and distribution of news and information to a largely non-white population. Is this overwhelming? Not if you consider some of the facts we've heard this evening. The last report that the Department of Commerce did tracking media ownership was in 2000. It stopped doing the reports. At that time, it found that 3.8% of all full-power broadcast stations in the country were owned by people of color. Now, when an independent nonprofit group does the job that the federal government should be doing, we find that the actual ownership by minorities has decreased since 2000. So while the minority population of the country is increasing, the minority ownership of radio and television is decreasing. So this is a troubling trend that we've been trying to get data on. The FCC has not been mining its own data. The Commerce Department has stopped doing the studies. While the race or ethnic background of an owner is hardly a sure guarantee of more balanced news coverage, the FCC's own study several years ago, in response to the Aberrant case, found a clear connection between minority ownership and more diversity in content and staffing. For 11 years now, the NAHJ has produced its annual Network Brownout Report, as our executive director mentioned earlier. Each report examines coverage of Latinos and evening news of the major networks. Every year, it shows the same depressing result. Stories about Latinos have made up less than 1% of the more than 12,000 network news stories that air annually, even while the Latino population continued to explode. This is going on year after year after year. When Latinos are covered, the two dominant themes are invariably undocumented immigration and crime. The harm done to our community and to the general society by this persistent marginalization of Hispanics and by the preponderance of stereotypical coverage cannot be overestimated. As a veteran journalist, I know that ownership matters. There are few news executives in our time brave enough to buck the viewpoints of their owners on a day-to-day basis. It is not a matter of how many different channels, how many niche publications, on how many platforms or particular venues you produce your content. If it's the same owners, the viewpoint diversity, no matter how many different niche publications and how many outlets you have, will not be substantially different. Diversity in ownership, it is extremely unlikely the public will receive sufficient diversity in viewpoint and coverage. Because of media ownership concentration, our democratic discourse has been cheapened and distorted. We call on the FCC to use its regulatory powers to reverse this dangerous trend, to reassert the long-established principles of our national broadcast policy of diversity, localism, and competition. If we do not reassert them, then we are headed for a de facto apartheid media system. Thank you.
Billy May, he is a sports anchor and morning sea host. I should tell you all that we have their resumes and one of the playbills that we have out there. So if you're more curious than the very short introduction that I'm giving to the panelists, please look at that and you'll find the resume. Coach?
Well, thank you. You won't find my resume or the story about me in your program, but I think what has happened today with this situation, they've got that our situation in Boston has happened is so important that I was invited here to New York to tell you about something very paralyzing in Boston, and that's why I'm here tonight to tell you about it. August 20th, yeah, just a little less than 2 months ago, my life changed. Not just mine, but my colleagues at the radio station that I worked at for 22 years. About 5 years ago, our station, WILD, was bought by Radio One, who owns, multi-stations all over the country. But you know what? They didn't care about the little station in Boston. So what they did was, they paralyzed us. They took away our voice. We don't have a minority station anymore. We don't have a community station anymore. You see how it is out in this crowd right now? That's what it's like in Boston right now. Quiet. We don't want that to happen here. We don't want that to happen anywhere else. We got to be heard. And we cannot allow consolidation to put an end to our voice. And that's what's happened to us. And it was done in such a cowardly way. I had a chance to talk to the commissioners earlier. And I told them, was worse than the Radio Shack situation. When they let go of all the people about a month ago, let them know by email. Let me tell you, I get a call August 20th, I'm home with my son. We're about to go out and go to the wrestling match. He's excited, I am too. And I listen to a voicemail message saying, "Hi coach, this is blah 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 from Radio One. Called to tell you that the station's been sold. You come in tomorrow, do your shift, and we'll let you know if you've been retained or if you've been severed." That next day, all of us were let go. Just like that. Is that easy? Is that simple for someone to just pull away your career that you've worked so hard for and worked so diligently for? And we don't want none of us out here or any of us up here to go through that paralyzing situation. So what I'm here to do is to let you know, talk to our commissioners, let them know that we've got to stop consolidation. It's ripping us apart, it's tearing us apart, and believe me, I'm here to tell you firsthand. I've never in my 25-year career not had a job. It's a different space for me. It's a different space for a lot of my coworkers. This is what I love doing. It's the passion that I still have, and I want to have that situation back again. But with consolidation, it's not going to happen. Also, with the local marketing agreements, a lot of slacking in those rules. Our people at the FCC have got to tighten up that situation, because let me tell you, LMAs are a mother, and we found out the hard way. Also, just as the commissioner said, some of my other panelists have said, consolidation is killing radio, and guess what? If we don't do something about it now, it's gonna affect television also. We have got to go out there and handle our business. We cannot be silenced. The media is too big. We are too big. Yes, the airwaves are ours. We gotta show them that they are ours. And we're gonna fight to the end on this situation in Boston. Just to tell you real quick before I wrap it up, the station that took over our frequency in Boston, we got flipped like a piece of real estate. We bought for $5 million, sold for $30 million. They didn't even want our frequency. All they wanted was our antenna. The station already simulcast on another frequency. So, what do they need ours for? We've been silenced, but now they're on two frequencies. Don't let this continue to happen. We need your support. Thank you.
Excuse from the podium, if I can have the second panel get more in the middle. And while that is happening, I'm going to ask a number of you to come up to the microphones that are on either side to get in those lines over there. We will start with some elected officials. They are Congressman Anthony Weiner, Council Member Melissa Riverito, and New York State Senator Efrain Gonzalez. So if I can have them come up to the podium first. I have another list, and if you will start coming up to the podium, and the people that are going to be doing the timing, if you will get next to the microphones, so that if we can do this very quickly. And you will all have 3 minutes to speak. Please be very aware of time. We want to be sure that we hear from everyone, and we won't be able to if, in fact, we dally too long. So let me read some names, and then we will go from there. Bianca Diaz, Lisa Davies, Marlene Falou, Adam Moore, Angelo Alicea, Wesley Beeks,
Tim Carr, John Brinkley, Agustin Perez, Omar Sully, Ronnie Wheeler, Vanessa Ramos, Zuleika Cabrera, Rafael Ortiz, Americo Casiano, Luis Cancel, Miguel Bonilla, Dan Copeland, Irene, it says here representative, but they can't quite be right, Charlie Dominguez, Francisco Estarellas, Gina Falu, Luis Garden Acosta, Nancy Giles, Kathy James, Carl Kevin Lipscomb, Tomas Lopez, Edwin Marshall, Edwin Pagan, Domingo Ramos, Florence Rice, Mariela Rosario, Arti Chahani, Yvonne Shields, Javier Soriano, Mario Tapia, Antoine Wallace, and Kai Hume. I don't see a lot of people lining up at the microphones. Is that happening? All right. I see State Senator over here. Is that correct?
Correct.
State Senator, welcome. You are first.
Thank you. Good evening, Commissioner Edelstein and Commissioner Cox and all of you. I think that I support this kind of forum and this kind of public hearings that you do and conduct around the country. I know that I agree with what Professor Davila and Juan Gonzalez had stated. Part of the thing is that as a New York State Senator and as a president of the National Hispanic Policy Institute, that merger of Univision, Clear Channel, and HBC, because they were in the middle of that vision. And to that, you two voted against that for the record. And I'm glad, because one of the things is that the FCC applies a rule that they wanted to, or made up rules that they wanted to make up as they went along. My interest was the public's interest, and my interest not only the Policy Institute, and we went to court, to the Second Circuit, because although we're all in terms of fighting the consolidation with the corporate interest, that our interest was the public's interest. And although the judges that got appointed or to that ruled against us, one of the things I found was that the 1996 Communication Act, it was more in tune to the corporate interest and not to the public interest. In that particular situation, I have some testimony that I will be submitted for the record in order to move the program. But as we move along, we need the other commissioner to join you guys in terms of making this the FCC so that the public's interest will be defended at all costs. So that means two things. That means that that goes legislatively to the next act, whatever they're going to do. Because I always felt that you two commissioners always act as you always speaking to the television. You've acted always in the interest of the public, and you speak to the television like we speak to technology that is coming forth on the airwaves. But the main thing is that we all have to be together, because when, as we move along in terms of finding diversity and opportunity, whatever the corporation is, we're not there. We don't own it, we don't manage it, and we hardly even work there. So in that sense, all they want is our dollars, our earned dollars, because this is all about advertising, and our dollars and everything. And we have to be more united and more in terms of the public's interest, so that when the big corporations start laying out money out there and start throwing money out there, the public cannot sell out. That's the part in the fight that we have in the days ahead as we go to a new communication act that will allow, like the commissioners that we have there and the ones that we need to be appointed to fit to make America what it ought to be.
Thank you
very much.
We have Congressman Anthony Weiner in the auditorium. I do not. Do I have Councilmember Melissa Viverito? She is on her way. Please let me know when she's here. I will need the two people that are keeping track of time right next to the microphones, otherwise we'll never get done. So are you that person? Who is the person on this other side? Okay, get right next to the person who is speaking so that they can see your note. Remember, you are limited to 3 minutes. We're gonna hold tight to that. Otherwise, we won't hear from everyone that is in line. All right, now we're gonna go to this corner first. Give your name and your testimony. You have 3 minutes.
Thank you. My name is Lex Lyric. I broadcasted on WKCR FM 89.9 in 1998. And I'm founder and chief director of Urban Beyond Media Incorporated.
Get closer to the mic, Brian.
I'm founder and director of Urban Beyond Media Incorporated. I'm hip hop, so I'll just pick it up. I wanted to ask you first and foremost, what will the FCC do to directly promote minority ownership of broadcast media?
You know, this is your testimony rather than a question and answer period.
All right.
So give us your testimony.
My testimony?
Yes.
My testimony is that I've had the opportunity to see both sides of the divide with regard to individuals who owned and were minorities here from when I was working as an intern for Granite Broadcasting Corporation under W. Don Kornmother. And I've seen other individuals who've worked for more public entities which have also helped and provided some use to the community, but not owned. And I would really, really appreciate if someone on the FCC would go to bat for ownership and engage in activities that would promote ownership on a very grassroots level. It's about education. It's very much also about having access. My brother went to Horace Mann. He actually was in the same class as Lachlan Murdoch. Who's Rupert Murdoch's son. Rupert Murdoch's son goes out into the world and, you know, got hired, drops out. He's still going to be running a multi-million dollar corporation. It's because of access. What I want to know what the FCC will do to promote access in each market. I think there are about 220 odd of them in the whole United States.
Wrap it up, please.
And what we can do that, I would sincerely appreciate it and be, you know, a lot more thankful for the point that we have individuals who are actually going to bat for corporations that are coming up, because if they don't have anyone to go to bat for them, they're simply going to phase out and die.
Very good. Thank you very much. Now, folks, we've got to stay for the 3 minutes. So I will need the people that are timing to make sure that you get them in the 3 minutes and you cut them off at that particular point. 2 minutes. Excuse me. I said three. It's two. All right, we're on this side over here. Your name? I'm sorry?
Dimitri.
One more time, I can't hear you.
Dimitri.
Did I say three? Then we'll stick to three. Here we go.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Lisa Davis. I'm with the Tri-State Save Like It Is Support Coalition. Like It is the longest running black produced show in U.S. history, and it's also the best. I'm here to present my testimony in terms of what the FCC has done, not to mention the horrific way in which WABC television treats and disrespects the black community, and I got the letters in my hands to prove it. But for over a year, I want everyone to know for over a year, and I'm also from New Jersey, so you have the experience here in the night, but you need to come across the river. I'm here to ask you to do that as well. We have been trying for over a year. We have been sending letters to the FCC, the chair, Kevin Martin. I've even sent letters to you, Commissioner Cox, and heard nothing. We sent over 1,500 letters. I have 9 of them here that I'm going to be presenting in terms of the complaints against ABC. But we have been complaining and talking about that the FCC needs to come over here. We've been asking you to come to New Jersey for over a year, and we can't get anybody to even acknowledge us. One person did, I had to call several times, Roy Sherlock, who's the chair of the localism task force hearings, and nothing. She didn't, I mean, it was patronizing. When I said I would like to have hearings over in Newark and in New York, and she responded with information I didn't even ask for, what I already knew. That is not acceptable. We are going to continue this fight. What has been going on is horrific. We're not going to stop. I'm tonight on the record requesting that you come into New Jersey, that you come to Newark, and that you never, ever again ignore the requests that have been sent to you. I have these letters, and I also have, again, the letters with our complaints and all of that. And I also wanted just to give acknowledgement to other groups I've worked with. Betty Dobson and CMOCAP has done an excellent job in terms of fighting for our interests. We want you to come to Newark as well.
Thank you very much.
Television has been, but
folks, I will need all of you to help us with this. We need an expedite heart. Thanks. And the people that are keeping track of time, you're going to have to wave your paper at me because I can't see you. So you're going to have to wave it when they're out of time so I can interrupt. Okay, let us go to this other side. Your name and your organization, please.
Good evening. My name is Malin Falu. I was born and raised in Puerto Rico. I remember when I was growing up, the only black female actress who participated in a TV program, a comedy about young students and their misbehaving in a classroom, the character was dumb, ugly, ignorant, and violent. At that time, I could not understand why she was selected to be the laughingstock of the class. I resented that character throughout my life. My life in the media has been a bittersweet experience. I remember at the beginning of my career in radio in New York, the marketing executive of a major Latino food company decided not to use me for a series of commercials after a face-to-face interview. Then I was left a message the next day to forget everything that was spoken about. Evidently, he never expected me to be black. On another occasion, I was recommended by a colleague for an audition for a television anchor position in a leading Spanish network. The following day, my colleague asked the news department to review the tape, and he was told that the tape mysteriously disappeared. Throughout my career, I have been affected and disturbed by the fact that you rarely see, if ever, a black Latino woman in a role as a lawyer, doctor, or any other professional. Or any other Spanish channel. Blacks have been depicted as slaves, black samples, illiterate or sexual objects. The disparity is impressive and impactful and is too often, for me, painful and depressing to watch. In my 28 years as a broadcast journalist, I have seen one of the few black Latino women in Hispanic radio and television. I am particularly concerned with the lack of change and inclusion of Afro-Latinos in Spanish television. Black Latinos are in the front. I may be the only black Latina anchoring a daily talk show coast to coast for a national Hispanic audience. I commend Jose Luis Rodriguez, the Executive Director of the Hispanic Information and Telecommunications Network, HITN, for daring to be on the cutting edge of programming and hiring me as the host of Diálogo de Costa a Costa. I feel privileged to have the opportunity to be part of a program that deals with the most challenging issues faced by our community on a daily basis. It is important that the FCC commissioners, which have joined us today, understand the important role of independent and community media in reflecting our values, historic culture, the true diversity of our communities, and most important, the issues they face. It is imperative that big consortiums controlling the airwaves and monopolies are stopped.
Thank you. folks, we're running behind in time. I called a lot of names, and I didn't realize that the majority of you were here. So this is what we're going to do. As you can see, we have a panel that is already here. So I'm going to ask the first five in line to stay in line. The other ones that are behind the first five, sit down. You will be the first ones in the second round of testimony. All right, so the first five, count yourselves off. Come on, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The rest of you, sit down. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 on this side. Sit down. You will be the first ones in the testimony when we get started with the testimony. I have a panel, as you can see. Now, you're going to have to help me out by staying on time. You got 3 minutes, and I'm going to have to cut you off if I have to, okay? Vamos para acá, por favor.
My name is Miguel Bonilla with the Hispanic AIDS Forum. It's the largest HIV/AIDS health promotion organization in New York City. In the last 4 years, a staff member was brutalized in front of his home in the Bronx while being called fag and maricón. Over 30,000 Latino men, women, and youth are living with HIV, and the number continues to climb dramatically. An estimated $100 million will be cut in programs for HIV, programs that prevent homelessness and give medicine for people to live. Yet somehow, Plushenko, the Russian blue cat, lost in Madison Square Garden, gets more visibility than the lives of New York City's largest ethnic population. How can this be? 3 years ago, HAF, along with 50 other community organizations, were invited to a WADC community forum where we would discuss ways to diversify the news. We sat around at tables with friendly producers and reporters who seemed genuinely interested in covering our stories. Yet after more than 200 press releases, media advisories, and public service announcements, not one story has been picked up by WABC. Unfortunately, from our experience, this is the norm. As the nation's regulator for radio and television broadcasts, the FCC has the power to change such disproportionate media coverage. You can fine broadcasters whose staff is not representative of the community they serve. You can require broadcasters to report a percentage of their stories on issues related to communities of color. You can set up a panel between the ethnic media and mainstream broadcasters to learn more about issues that matter to us. Or you can appoint an ombudsman to represent the interests of the public by investigating and addressing complaints reported by individual citizens.
Wrap it up.
Okay. Or perhaps we could, well, that's it.
Muy bien, vamos al otro lado, por favor. Señora, su nombre.
My name is Florence Emerais. A consumer advocate. I have a show for Florence, 30 minutes on Florence Rice. What concerns me is the fact that the only time you see people of color on television is when they've committed a crime. I was so deeply concerned of that, I created a seminar day for black men and Latin men. The fact is that is all you see. What the message is being sent to our young people, our children,
yes,
that
ma'am.
The only time that people of color are criminals.
All
what
right.
they're doing to our young children is taking all hopes and dreams away from them. It's
yes,
time
ma'am.
That the FCC begin to understand they're supposed to represent the people. They're supposed to do that, which they haven't done. I'm deeply concerned. One of the questions I would like to know them about community access to public technology. Public broadcasting, why the community is not at the table when these decisions are made, and they are not. What is the community on these discussions? So it bothers me, the fact is that we are concerned what the television and companies, the large companies, are doing to our children. The only thing that I see that is being done is children of color is being dumbing down to realize that there's no hope for them. So right. I'm deeply concerned. FCC, it is time, and Mr. Cox, I will try to reach you. It's important that the media realize that the air is free, and they're not to be able to control it like they do.
Thank you, ma'am. So the first four from this side over here, the rest of you, please sit down. And you will be the first ones when we reconvene. On this side first. And the people that are keeping track with time, I need for you to wave that piece of paper. I can't see your time from here, but I can see you wave. So let us go, please.
My name is Serene Lee from Yutong Dynasty TV, independent Chinese language network. And my testimony is called "But Chinese Battling for the Freedom of Information." I want to ask everyone, do you know that after 9/11, there's a lot of Chinese, even many Chinese in New York, they cheer about this tragedy. That is exactly because of the long-term brainwashing from the Chinese Communist Party's propaganda. And the Chinese Communist Party seeks to dominate Chinese language media all around the world. And over the past 20 years, they have been very successful in implementing this strategy in the United States. For example, I want you to pay attention to a Chinese language network called CCTV, which is the China Central Television. That is the mouthpiece of the Chinese Communist Party. So the CCTV, over the past 20 years, has been expanding dramatically in the United States. Now they have been broadcast from dozens of satellites, including many US-based satellites. They also they have programs in Chinese, English, Spanish, and French. Their program covers the entire globe, and now CCTV programs are aired in all the US nationwide satellite networks and almost all the major cable channels in the United States. Through CCTV's broadcasting in the U.S., Chinese Communist Party's propaganda is targeting every single Chinese family in the United States. CCTV has been extensively utilizing its business ties with the U.S.-based satellite cable networks to block the airing of independent Chinese language media such as Yutong Dynasty TV, NTD TV. And also I want to say, this is not a matter of free flow of information, it is a matter of national security.
Please wrap it up.
As CCTV is trying to control the Chinese America, Chinese Communist Party is trying to control the Chinese America to remain loyalty and to act as a mouthpiece, defenders, and even agents of the Chinese Communist Party. I want to call the commissioner to, we should have a legislation to require that every single US satellite, cable, and other transmission operators who carries CCTV programs or other Chinese Communist Party controlled programs should carry independent Chinese language programs such as NTD TV programs as well.
Thank you very much. That line hasn't gotten shorter, guys. I've got three people over here and need three people over there. Please, go ahead.
Good evening, honorable commissioners, invited guests, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Blanca Diaz. I am a member of WBAI's Coalition for the Retention and Expansion of Latino Program. The Latino Coalition would like to take this opportunity to thank the organizers of the event for providing a forum where the voices of underrepresented communities can be heard. This coalition has been formed in order to safeguard and expand Latino programming at WBAI. Its members consist of WBAI listeners, union leaders, community activists, elected officials, cultural and arts institutions, as well as WBAI non-commercial radio producers. The Latino Coalition's initiatives are expand Latino programming to reflect the 27% Latino population in the tri-state area,
retain current Latino programming at WBAI, implement policies that promote the hiring of Latino staff, allot resources to promote, train, support Latino staff and recruitment, support the broader issues of underrepresented populations in media. The Latino Coalition will make itself available to discuss our issues in greater detail in the 2 minutes allotted here. Our community has a long-standing dispute about the programming at WBAI dating back to the early 80s when there were 0 hours dedicated to the Latino community. As of January 2006, there was an attempt at WBAI to eliminate popular Latino programs while at the same time setting up a divisive situation among Latinos at the station. The producers of these programs have joined forces in order to send the message to WBAI and Pacifica management that Latinos at WBAI refuse to be pitted against each other by management to compete for a couple of hours a week allotted for Latino programs. Over the past 20 years, representatives from community have made efforts to meet and negotiate with WBAI management in order to arrive at a resolution that will be beneficial to the station, to the Latino community, and WBAI listeners at large. Our coalition would like to make recommendations to the honorable commissioners of the FCC. We recommend that the non-commercial public airways be protected from commercial buyouts and in effect be protected under the statutes of public trust.
30 seconds.
That public access cable television not be parceled out to private interests, but that it indeed remain a medium accessible to the general public. That all commercial and public radio and television reflect the growing demographics of Latino within the United States, as well as the diversity of all other ethnic groups in its hiring practices, news coverage, and in programming. The WBAI Coalition for the Retention and Expansion of Latino Programming endeavors to make a difference on the local level. We wholeheartedly support the efforts of the organizations represented here today. Our struggles are one of the same. We sincerely hope we will be able to continue this dialogue and through the exchange of higher principles and ideals, we'll arrive at a place that will promote a greater understanding among our citizens.
Let us do the following, folks. All of you who have written testimony, I want you to turn it in to the young people that are right there in front of you, giving you times. Please hand it in, and for those of you that have gone before that have written testimony, please pass it over. Now, we go much faster where you don't read. Remember, you're not professional readers, and it's hard sometimes to understand you. So if you can tell us verbally what you're written down, that would be great. If you feel you absolutely must, I see this young woman over here. If she is here, yes, we will attend to her first. Please.
Thank you, and I want to commend the organizers of this forum, which I think is critical. And my name is Melissa Marquiverito. I'm a New York City Council member, and I'm here representing the Black, Latino, and Asian caucus of the City Council. 26 out of the 51 members of the New York City Council are people of color. We are Black, Latino, and Asian, and I'm very proud to represent them here today. Basically, our concerns with regards to this forum and the reason we decided to maybe take a stand is the access to representation through the media is not just a civil right, it's a human right. And when we talk about inalienable rights, communication rights are based on a new, more powerful understanding of the implications of human rights and the role of media. The key principles of communication rights are freedom, inclusiveness, diversity, and participation. Diversity of ownership in the media and forms of access to the media that ensure that the views of all sectors and groups in society are heard is obviously critical here. Now, it's critical to democracy and to political participation. Big media leaves little room for diversity. Big corporations push out other outlets that may offer competing points of view, meaning less diversity of voices and a narrower range of debate. According to Out of the Picture, a study on minority and female TV station ownership in the US, minority owners thrive in more competitive markets, and minority production of local news is more likely to occur in a competitive market. Big media does not serve local communities of color. Stations that are owned by people of color only serve a small percentage of African American, Latino, and Asian American households. 8 out of 10 Latino homes are not served by a Latino-owned station. 9 out of 10 African American homes are not served by an African American-owned station. 9 out of 10 Asian American homes are not served by an Asian American-owned station. Thus, percentage of businesses owned by people of color has increased over the past several years in nearly every sector of the economy except broadcast television. There has been no improvement in the level of minority broadcast television ownership since 1998, even as the total universe of stations has increased by approximately 12%. Clearly, big media ignores diversity. The needs of people of color and the working class are ignored because these people are not advertisers. Reports show that most media organizations are not owned by people of color and are therefore not invested in the needs of those communities. New York City contains a significant number of African American and Latino TV households, yet there are no African American or Latino owned TV stations. And obviously the importance of diverse local ownership of media is critical in all this. So we are here to express our serious concern as legislators, and we really feel that this is an issue that has to be addressed. I think there are clear examples nationally. I think Clear Channel is an example of how divergent views have been stifled, and right. We really need to be mindful of that. Right. So thank you for your time.
Yes, my name is Uncle Wale, Ade Wale, from organization Grassroots Artist Movement Game, and I would like to talk a little bit from an artist perspective. In terms of also as advocate of hip hop, I went to Nigeria last December, and what I basically realized, and I kind of knew before I even went there, is that they had this idea of black males in the U.S. So I went to Nigeria. They wanted to see me blinged out, having all the bling, talking about having guns and so on and so forth. Where they get this information from? Viacom control company. MTV, VH1, that's what they have. BET, exactly. It's not really a black entertainment television. They're black, you don't own it, basically. But the reality is, it was really ironic that when I went there, I'm coming from the South Bronx. You don't know the congressional district there is the poorest in the entire nation. So I'm coming into, Nigeria, and Lagos, and it looks pretty much the same way South Bronx looks. So they're looking for me, anticipating somebody coming in all blinged out. So, but I had to basically explain to them, basically the idea that people have of Nigerians, was just as backwards. So, and that's basically media. That's the issue and that's the fault of media. What happens is a lot of artists, they see the artists on television and they hear the artists on radio, and all of a sudden they feel that, this artist, may have backwards ideas. Look how this artist is talking about this misogynistic artist, this artist from our bling, extravagant things, so on and so forth. But the reality is, as soon as they sign that contract, the A&R's in the air telling them what to put out there, what to put on radio. It's the owners telling them what to put out. But who hears the flat? The artist hears the flat. So it's basically, do I put food on the table, or do I basically, I got to come to terms? And that basically puts the artists in a situation where they can't afford to eat if they don't talk about going against their community, talk about real issues, what's going on in the South Bronx. The community actually created hip hop. Instead of talking about blink, and we go in there, there's no blink. It's just reality, just a lot of hustling, and the legal sense of it, that I'm just trying to survive, trying to get by. So what we need to do, and I heard you gentlemen, other gentlemen as well from the FCC, and it sounded real good, but what's happening? If you guys, are saying these great things out here and making us have a bunch of support, then what's happening with the FCC? There's nothing really fixed. I'm going to answer you exactly why. If you guys are so pro what we're talking about, in terms of having regulations and stopping consolidation, then what's happening? What's the holdup?
I am Zenaida Mendez, Director of External Affairs for the Manhattan Labor Network Public Access Television.
Policy must be instituted that encourage ownership of media outlets by people of color, and more generally, to give marginalized communities across the country broader access to the airways and the media. Local access and control ensure that communities have a voice in determining what their future communication systems look like. Local access means giving communities the ability to create their own media and the power to decide how to meet their own technology and communication needs. Those needs include everything from public television channels to universal broadband internet services. Today, local access is more important than ever. We are entering in an era of 3-in-1. Telephone, television, and internet service all will come through the same pipeline. Let's talk about the lack of diversity in New York City and media representation in the commercial Spanish-speaking radio and television programs. There is a lack of diversity voices from within the United States. Even Univision and Telemundo show a significant number comes from a handful of Latin American countries, and the radio stations are very few. In addition, there are few with programs that are vulgar and disrespectful. Afro-Latinas and Latinos of indigenous descent are almost invisible in the commercial airway. Issues that negatively affect community of color in New York City are not adequately addressed. Considering the ethnicity makeup of our community and how community of color historically have been portrayed in the media, and the structure that continue to result in misrepresentation, it is vital to have a strong media sector controlled and operated by people of color. With that comes a broader structural change. This means that media need to really assess and make sure that all the community in New York City are definitely included.
You have 1 minute.
New York City is unique. There are over 120 languages spoken and people from all over the world. Each New York City neighborhood has its own flavor and vibrant culture. New York City is for the fortune to have public education and governmental access community media to fill the void. As of today, Manhattan Neighborhood Network Public Access Television Station provides individual and community-based organizations with training and television equipment that they need to make television production, particularly to those traditionally disenfranchised communities that are systematically shut out by the corporate mainstream media, such as the low-income immigrant, LGBT, and community of color. These programs are then aired in Manhattan 4 public access TV channel on the Time Warner cable and RCN system, reaching 650,000 households throughout the borough. What I want to let you know is that Latina, and just like Marie Falou mentioned it, we Afro-Latinos are completely out of the picture, and we need to be included. Thank you.
Yes, my name is Tomas Lopez Pumarejo. I teach international business at the Department of...
Get closer to the mic, please.
Yes, my name is Tomas Lopez Pumarejo. I teach international business at Department of Economics of Brooklyn College, City University of New York. I just wanted to make 2 points. The first point being that management and ownership are not the same thing, and sometimes management is more important than ownership. And at the national level, in management in general, only 50% of the Fortune 500 companies' managers are female. And in all managerial positions in the country, only 6.4% of managers are African Americans, and only 4.5% of managers are Hispanics. And I imagine that when it comes to media companies, that numbers, those figures are much less. The other point I wanted to make is that corroboration hurts the United States. Something I would like to underscore because it has been said at three levels. The first level is because the system of government of the United States is a web of local governments for which for it to function, it requires informed citizenry at the local level. It hurts the American economy because, needless to say, monopolies and oligopolies work
against the free market economy. But we haven't considered one aspect that is very, very important about local media, and it's security and safety. Perhaps other people here are aware that when Katrina happened, there was only one low-power FM station in the vicinity of Louisiana that was able to keep people informed of what was going on, and hence helps save lives.
You're on time. Wrap it up,
please. So that's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
My name is Luis Cancel. I'm from the Clemente Soto Velez Cultural Center, the largest arts incubator in New York City, which is located in the Lower East Side. And it is a pleasure for me to have this opportunity to address FCC Commissioners Copps and Adelstein and the other distinguished members of the panel. As the Commission considers the question of whether or not to relax ownership rules, it should keep in mind the importance that the Founding Fathers gave to a free and unfettered press. The press being the only media outlet of their age. They made sure that the First Amendment of the Constitution protected both freedom of speech and a free press. James Buchanan, the 15th President of the United States, observed, and I quote him, "I like the noise of democracy." Buchanan liked the cacophony of opinions, the multiplicity of views, the diversity that can only find expression through a rich and diverse environment of independently owned newspapers, radio, and TV stations. I am here today to urge you and your fellow commissioners to desist in the effort to allow the cross-ownership of media properties in the same community by a single corporate entity.
What's the matter?
The relaxation of this prohibition will not promote diversity of opinion. This relaxation will not encourage ethnic minorities to own their own radio and TV stations. The relaxation of cross-ownership will only succeed in producing a homogenization of views and information to the general public. The adoption and spread of a single view as fewer news directors and fewer owners help to determine on a daily basis what is news, what is important to cover, and share their opinion with the public. The concentration by media ownership by conglomerates will limit diversity in ownership by ethnic groups, those groups that wish to start or purchase a small radio or TV station will find themselves competing with larger, better financed media corporations that will inevitably prevail by raising the price of ownership.
Robin, please.
The concentration of ownership by press, radio, and TV outlets makes local stations less responsive to local issues and needs. Now, I run a local Latino cultural organization. We have 4 theaters there, and we cannot get proper coverage in our local media here. And we're in almost the largest Latino media market in the country. So imagine what would be the consequences of that with continued consolidation. So with that, I will say the famous last quote I was going to give you, and thank you very much.
Thank you. So I have one more person on this side. I know I only have one more person on that other side, so the rest of you will be first when we come back. Please, your name first.
My name is Annie Marte.
Annie Marte, poquito más al micrófono, por favor. Somebody help her, please. There we go. Thank you. Arrímate.
My name is Irene Martez, and I'm a member of the student leadership team at Vanguard High School. Today I'm speaking on behalf of the Reach Hip Hop, representing educational activism and community through hip hop. I believe that people in the media should always be socially responsible for everything that they say. They have younger kids listening to them, thinking that what they are saying is right. I understand that there is freedom of speech, but can't they reason what they say? I really don't like to wake up in the morning to hear curses and stereotypes about people. This also affects my 4-year-old sister who loves the radio. She sits at home thinking it's okay to say what people on the radio say. She was told to listen to her elders, but it's kind of hard to teach a 4-year-old that the N word and the B word are not okay when she hears people on the radio say it. Wouldn't they rather have people look up to them as role models than people look down at them because they say bad things to make people feel bad? I don't want my little sister to grow up thinking that it's okay to speak like that. The radio is heard by the public, so they should respect the opinion of their listeners. The FCC should take action to improve the diversity of media ownership to represent what real listeners want to hear. We want to hear local New York City artists, not only those who can afford to engage in legal payola participants. We want diversity and choice in the media outlets. Young people are shaped by the media, and we need a range of listening and viewing.
I am the Director of Policy at the Committee for Hispanic Children and Families, founded in 1982 with the mission of improving the quality of life of Latino children and families in New York City in child care, family health, and youth development. We are here to state our deep concern regarding the course media broadcasting has taken and raise our voice against further media consolidation. FCC has been failing in its duty to protect the public interest and democracy in the media and abandoned the obligation of ensuring diversity and fairness in media ownership and broadcasting. By enacting regulations favoring media conglomerates, you're having a chilling effect on speech and discussion. If this trend continues, the effects upon children, particularly children of color, are going to be detrimental. To give you an example, as of July 2005, New York City's population was over 8 million, and Latinos comprised 27.9%. The poverty rate in the city is way above the national level, and approximately 22% of New Yorkers are living under the poverty line. 29.1% of Latinos live under the poverty line, and 32.5% of New York City's children live under poverty. These children in these families need dreams and role models that are culturally sensitive to their reality and are looking for media programming with a positive influence in their development and future. The media can be an agent of social justice by promoting early learning, fostering diversity and respect of all races, presenting positive role models, and stimulating creativity. Therefore, this is the time to take affirmative steps in promoting equal opportunity corresponding to the cultural richness of the many communities in this country. We should join hands in removing the barriers of privilege and reconstruct a new media that will stand for local broadcasting and advance the welfare of all of our children. We urge you not to follow the path of giving power to the ones that already have too much power.
All right.
And to do the moderation on this particular panel, we have my very good friend, Angelo Falcon. Remember that the rest of you will be the first ones up when we come back for testimony. Angelo Falcon. Say hello.
Thank you all very much for your patience. We're trying to get a lot in here, and we obviously came up with a very unrealistic schedule, the way we're scheduled, so we really appreciate your patience in getting all this. As all, I think Alex mentioned to all of you, this will be turned into a transcript that will be submitted to the FCC as an official testimony. So it's a process we're going to go through. The next panel, consists of some very exciting speakers. I'm very honored to be a part of this. And so I'll just introduce them as they speak. And again, 5 minutes is not too much time, so we'll be very brutal. I have to be brutal in terms of cutting you off and stuff, unfortunately. So let me start with Anthony Riddle. Anthony, if you could introduce yourself.
Thank you. I wanted to thank the National Latino Media Council and all of its members for bringing us here, Free Press. I'd like to thank the commissioners and staff for being here, and most especially I'd like to thank all of you who have the commitment to come out this late at night and to stay through the proceedings. I work for the Alliance for Community Media, which represents the interests of thousands of public educational and government access channels around the country. Those access centers, in turn, produce more than 20,000 hours of new programming per week, using 1.2 million volunteers per year and serving over 250,000 community organizations per year on the channels. A lot of you probably know what we do by now. I'm appealing to you as an African-American, as a current resident of the Lower East Side, and as a resident of Harlem, to understand why this is an important issue, this media ownership is an important issue. A lot of you may know about the holiday Juneteenth. Juneteenth is a celebration of June 19th, when the slaves in Galveston, Texas, were told of the Emancipation Proclamation approximately 2.5 years after it was signed.
No reparations.
Yeah, that's the next hearing. But the point is that there were, for 2.5 years, people were born slaves that should have been born free. For 2.5 years, people died slaves that should have had a few moments of freedom. And for 2.5 years, people worked for a system which chose not to give them the information they needed to be free people. And I submit to you that that's the situation we're in today. The question. Will your children be slaves? And I hope that you know what the answer needs to be to that. The Alliance for Community Media asks for the FCC to strengthen the rules which encourage media ownership by people of color and women. The entire PEC community that I talked about above functions on less than 1% of all of the cable revenues. And the cable revenues are very small compared to the entire entertainment industry. And yet, we provide the only unmediated coverage of communities of color, coverage of positive cultural activities in our communities, which do not get commercial media attention. We provide the right and ability to create a community in our own image. And we provide technical training and jobs. PEG operations employ more people of color in management and technical positions than all of the commercial industry combined. Community control is only one form of ownership, though. Private sector ownership is tremendously important in a free market society. The relationship between ownership and content on one hand and advertising for minority and women-owned businesses on the other is profound. Women and minority owner-owned businesses, media aggregate different audiences and provide different opportunities for our businesses to advertise. As these advertisements allow our businesses to expand, the businesses in turn are more able to support the development and production of content for their own communities. Media ownership by women and people of color is good business for everyone. Several years ago, the Manhattan Neighborhood Network, right here in town, did a statistically valid survey which showed some amazing things. One of which is, well, for instance, Manhattan Neighborhood Network had over 90 Spanish language or Spanish culture series programs in a single year. And those programs represent Boricua, they represent Colombian, they represent Panamanian, they represent Dominican, they represent Mexican, they represent Spanish, they represent the whole diaspora. And yet, when you look at the size of that community in New York City and realize that it should have a market force that would cause the ownership of Hispanic or African American or Caribbean or African channel in this city, and it doesn't, then you realize that market forces are not enough to make sure that ownership is diverse and that we need rules that will protect that.
So you have to own.
Just like to point out that although we try to serve the needs of the female minority community, we're very under-resourced for that. The FCC is currently being asked by big corporate media to create new rules which will decrease diversity even before it finishes its own study on the health of women and minority media ownership. Our communities do not need someone to speak for us, however well-intentioned. We will speak for ourselves. Yeah. Yeah. First for business. It is first the voice of the people wanting to take responsibility for the direction of their own lives. In considering media ownership, women and minority ownership, or cable franchising rules, we ask that the FCC please keep in mind the cautionary tale of Juneteenth. There is more at stake here than a few dollars or a few shows. It is a question of who we value as a people. Thank you for your time.
Next panelist is Mr. African Bambaataa. He's by the way, he also has just finished taping a VH1 Hip Hop Lifetime Achievement Awards special.
I'd like to say peace and blessing and power and blessing to everybody. Brothers and sisters, so-called black, brown, yellow, red, white people, I want to speak to everybody as human beings. There's something funky going on in America, and we got to really wake up to see what is going on. Yes, the FCC got a lot of problems and got a lot of issues, but this has been going on for a long time. Payola in the radio stations, mind control, program directors. You got to understand what is a program director. Now, we are saying that there needs to be a balance on our airways. We, in the Zoom Nation, we say a balance of Maya. We got to understand, like, if you're playing 50 Cent, we want to hear Common Sense. Yeah. If you're playing, if you're metal, heavy metal, and you listen to Limp Bizkit and Korn, we still want to hear the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and the John Lennon and Little Richard. If you're in funk, calypso, or whatever, or salsa, you play the new school, we still want to hear the true school. We still want to hear Fanatic All-Star, Sell Your Cruz. We still want to hear Slide of Family Stone, James Brown, Interpretation. You see that they are trying to control your minds and the masses of the people. There's something that's going on with TV and media, why they want you to be using the N-word. Call a woman out of the names using the B-word. You got to check out who is controlling the minds of the masses of the people. Nothing's going to be done until you change the mindset of the people. Now, if you love Allah, Jehovah, Yahweh, Elohim, Jah, and you into all the so-called prophets of the Bible, the glorious Quran, and you sit on your asses every day, you go to church, the masjid, the temples, and you just worry about the FCC, if you don't get up off your butts and start finding out who is these program directors at these stations, who is these program directors at these stations, and get out there, you can protest, make their jobs hell, put fire to their asses, take all the sponsorships, make them be accountable to you, the American people. You got to come back and bring power back to the people, and you got to stand like Slime Family Stone said, stand.
Much appreciated. Our next panelist is Mary Ann Pryor, who's representing the Writers Guild of America East. For the record,
I'm here today on behalf of the Writers Guild of America East, the union that represents, it's a union that represents news writers as well as entertainment writers. For the last 25 years, I've been a news writer and editor at ABC News and Network Radio. I've seen firsthand the changes in the news division since ABC was taken over first by Capital Cities and later by Disney. These are changes that involve news quality, the commercialization of the news, the lack of diverse voices, and localism. I think everyone recognizes that the Walt Disney Company is a master of marketing. Nobody knows how to dabble better than the folks at Disney. What's troubling to many writers and producers at ABC News is how marketing is not just trickled down to ABC management, it's become a mantra. Managers push to get stories on the air to cross-promote ABC entertainment shows, overshadowing or pushing out other stories. Recently, the ABC TV network came under fire for a docudrama about the 9/11 attacks. It was an entertainment show, but at the news division, word went out that every script mentioning the controversy needed to be cleared by a company lawyer. At ABC Network Radio and its national affiliate news service,
There were more stories produced this year on the National Spelling Bee than in any prior year. This was also the first year that ABC televised the National Spelling Bee. Here in New York City, WABC-TV ran stories in its primetime news broadcast on magician David Blaine nearly every night of his eight-day underwater living stunt. His emergence from the water was televised on ABC in primetime. I would argue that such valuable news time could have been better allocated to local news of real value to the community. Managers also play the major markets and affiliates in the drive to gain audience share. In August 2003, the insurgency was just getting underway in Iraq. Conservative radio talk show hosts were saying the national media was overplaying the story. At ABC Network Radio, a top manager stood in the middle of the newsroom and decreed that we should, quote, only report on the good news coming out of Iraq. There was stunned silence in the newsroom. We all knew he wanted to please affiliates who carry these talk shows. We also knew it's our job to tell the truth to the American people, even if it's a terrible thing. Many people wondered why the very tragic murder of Lacey Peterson in California got so much attention, while murdered or missing women in smaller states and smaller cities got little or no airtime. The same goes for legislative changes in small states. The answer, in part, I think, is that California has many large markets. So ABC, like other major news organizations, jumped on every salacious detail of the Peterson case. In one instance, a manager saw an email based on one source that seemed to have new information. He wanted that information on the air immediately, even though it hadn't been verified. The senior editor and assignment editor pointed out it was a single source and we need at least two sources. As the manager insisted on rushing this on the air, the reporter involved threatened to quit. As the tense argument went on, ABC producers in California sent another email saying the new detail was dead wrong, don't use it. Only because the editors and the reporter had union protection and couldn't be fired on the spot were they able to stand up to a manager quite intent on violating a basic rule of journalism, get it right, in the hope of pleasing big affiliates. Now, WABC-TV, in current contract talks with the Writers Guild of America East, is insisting on removing show producers from the union. I believe that will reduce the quality of news. No longer will these producers be allowed to think independently. They will feel compelled to join the company marketing mania for fear of losing their jobs. This marketing mania has caused a change in the way story ideas are generated. Instead of bubbling up from everyone, a story lineup is imposed from the top down for all platforms, TV, radio, the internet, and the new digital channel. That means fewer diverse voices are heard. I remember several years ago when the singer Selena was murdered. I hadn't heard of her, but as a senior editor, I asked out loud in the newsroom if anyone knew who she was. A young desk assistant, a Latina from Texas, explained Selena was on the verge of big breakout stardom. She had an English language album coming out. We immediately got the story on the air. Now it's not clear if that young desk assistant's voice would be heard because the story agenda is coming from managers who are predominantly white and male. Because of the marketing fixation, independent story ideas from assignment editors and news writers are discouraged rather than encouraged. Even expert analysts come from a pre-approved list, so there aren't as many diverse voices and opinions heard on the air. At ABC, news writers and producers have been working without a contract for 20 months. CBS news writers and producers are also in protracted contract talks. We are struggling to remain objective journalists who understand the FCC's public interest obligation. We affirm our commitment to joining in the public fight for quality news and diverse news. In return, we hope you will support us in our struggle to maintain union contracts that protect journalists at ABC and CBS.
Greetings. Uhuru, which means freedom in Swahili. My name is M1. As it was stated, I'm one half of the international Tell It Like It Is, all too political group, Dead Press. I'm here to represent for African people. I'm here to represent for hip hop. I don't have a lot to say, but what I have to say is important. First of all, I'd like to pay respect to the father of this culture that I'm a part of. That's important. That's important because I think there's a few things that we do know, and what we do know is that the media of this country is an organ of the state the ruling class state that controls what we hear and what we see. I'm clear on that. So it helps me understand our position. It helps me understand that that this propaganda is part of a war that also exists against the black and brown community. It's not just a war for oil, it's a war for the minds of our people. And I've been a part of this. My group, Dead Prez, has been existing in this hip hop industry for about 12 years now, and I got an incredible education to understand what it takes for the voice of the people to be heard, because ultimately that's what we're trying to do, is let the people's voice be heard. Chiming in live from Brixton, where I'm just in from, and Mexico City, 25 million people, the voice of our people here is extinguished. We are voiceless. The image that's being reported to the people outside of America about what's going on here is false. It's just like my brother Omawale reported from the grassroots artist movement. And I'm here to balance the scales. It's only free voices that will be able to balance the scales. I'm a citizen of the year. I'm here to say that we're sick and tired of not having voices that reflect exactly our reality in our community. We're sick and tired. And we're also sick and tired of being bombarded with senseless and useless and meaningless messages that don't do anything but drive forward this capitalist machine and get us to spend more. That's not what we want to hear. That's not what we want to hear. I work for the people. The streets is my office. I put my ear to the ground and I hear our movement. That's not being recorded on radio. It's not what's being seen on the TV. That's what I do, you know, as a social animal. And right now I'm here to say that the word for the day is self-determination. That's what we need, self-determination. That's what inside this meeting, outside this meeting, over our lives, and it's being reflected in what's happening to our brains. What would Huey say on the 40th anniversary of the Black Panther Party? What would Huey P. Newton say? Community control, just like my partner here said. If we ain't talking about complete community control, if we're not talking about people being able to govern the voices that's coming into our community, our elders,
yes,
our ancestors, our leaders, like we say in hip hop, let the poppers pop and the breakers break. In other words, let the leaders lead and let that be the filter for what's being heard in our community, the real that need to be heard in our community. You know, basically, I'm gonna put it like that. Shout out to the Grassroots Artist Movement, which is an organization that's a union that's unionizing in hip hop to fight for the ownership of our art and our culture. It's either that or turn off the radio, turn off that bullshit.
Signed up to speak. I need to start with a coalition partner. Is that Nancy Chow in the room? Is she acting? She here?
Se
fue? Se fue? What? Too bad. Okay, ahora soy yo. The people who have been asked to sit down before, can you come to the, let's start with you. Come to the mic. And please, run the analysis. Don't sneak in. Okay, let's start on this side here. So you introduce yourself, and remember, it's 2 minutes. I'd also like to remind you, if you have written testimony, please give it to Joe Torres or Leticia. I don't know if they're around, they can raise their hands. Okay, submit it to us.
Thank you, sir. My name is Jim Sun. I just turned into a U.S. citizen this July. And I'm very proud here. Not only I enjoy the freedom and democracy here, and also I work for a nonprofit Gossip TV station, New Town Dynasty Television, that echoes the same. I'm not sure if people know much about the Chinese community and Chinese media here, but I can give one example that we do live broadcast translation, with live translation of U.S. presidential election and New York mayor election. And we put out those big screens in the parks, and people walk by, a lot of Chinese people walk by, they're very curious. A lot of them have been in this society for a long time, but they were never exposed to such information. And why? Because there is a power. There is a regime that has so much penetration in this country that it looked like there's a lot of diversity in that market, but the voice is not diversified. And we're trying to bring this diversified voice. And also another thing about our station that made me so proud, we are the only station that broadcasts uncensored information to China. And think about the huge market of China. A lot of people, a lot of big brands are in China, and why we are the only one who broadcasts uncensored information. Because it really took courage to do that. And another thing is we're mainly a volunteer organization, and think about a worldwide network that is maintained and run basically by volunteers. I have to go home. I mean, I do my job to earn my income and go home to take care of my children. And when everybody goes to sleep, I find time to work for NTD TV. That's how hard it is for most people working this station. And I'm here to ask the commissioners and people in the society, everyone, to think about the true diversity. It's not just the numbers, it's not how many stations that they run, how many programs that they run, like the lady had talked about before. It's the social responsibility, the responsibility to what matters in our hearts, what matters in the community. That's more important. And I hope for such an operation like our NTD TV and many others that I can see in this audience that can get support from the commission and get our voice really heard.
Thank you very much.
Mi nombre es Francisco Estanegas. Y por no conocer mucho el hablar en inglés, voy a hablar en español.
Sí, bien.
Nosotros,
sí.
Los latinoamericanos, quejarnos con los medios de comunicación, como la televisión en inglés y en español, que casi no anuncia la verdadera cultura de nuestro pueblo, que en realidad van a la decadencia y son televisiones que tienen grandes programas dedicados a los actos sexuales de la farándula, ignoran la cultura de nuestro país. Tenemos que decir que no es tanto, hasta en nuestros medios radiales de televisado en castellano y español, vemos esta falla de desconocimiento del idioma. Es necesario dejar de monopolizar las televisiones, porque se han concentrado en un monopolio de la estilística económica que solo sirven a los grandes intereses. Y dejando a un lado a los pobres, a la gente con menos conocimientos culturales, cuando la televisión debe ser para llevar la cultura de los pueblos, para enseñarles el avance y los grandes realidades de las naciones. Es sumamente desastroso ver estos actos culturales que se transmiten todos los días y ignorándose las raíces profundas, nuestra verdadera música y nuestra verdadera cultura. Esperamos que la organización que controla las televisiones ponga un ápice y enseñe a estas televisiones a enseñar cultura, alejarse del tanto sexo de la farándula, déjalo que más se dedica. Muchas gracias.
My name is Tom Murphy from representingpress.org. The marketplace will never serve the interests of the American people, will never serve the diversity of opinions and views held by the American people. We need the FCC to set aside several channels as public service channels as a counterbalance to mainstream media. The solution to concentrated ownership is to establish media channels that are free from private ownership. The FCC must establish several channels that are mandated to be representative of the general public. Someone wrote a BBC. The biggest or most extreme example of propaganda I've seen was the movie Path to 9/11. An example I want to talk about is a criticism that no one in mainstream media pointed out. In Path to 9/11, it contained a fabricated Fatwa quote, which purported to say that the motive of Al-Qaeda was to convert us to Islam? That's a lie. The motive of Al-Qaeda is to prevent the United States from supporting Israel and supporting other oppressive regimes. That's why we were attacked. An elite opinion wants to play a game and suppress why we were attacked. Elite opinion also suppresses illegal activities when it serves elite interests. I've struggled to get mainstream media to report that the war on Iraq would have been illegal. I've struggled to have them report that the settlements in the occupied territories are illegal. I've confronted N.J. Burkitt. He played it off and says everybody knows. It's a big game, and the only answer, like I said, is mandating public service channels. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Maria Cuadrado, Institute for Puerto Rican Hispanic Elderly. Just
I'm not sure. You may not be able to test it. I think you're too short.
I'll pick it up.
All right. Okay.
As I said, I work with the Institute for Puerto Rican Hispanic Elderly. Need I say that the elderly are totally ignored by the media?
Yes.
Information they need never is given out. And always what is presented is the youthful 25-year-old fashions, skins for the 25-year-old, creams for the 25-year-olds to keep their skins stretched nicely, 25-year-olds of course, so that the elderly are ignored. Consolidation of the media. Further consolidation will only serve to distance them even more from the reality of the population that is out there in the real world. We ask the FCC to really take action against continued consolidation and ensure that the public airwaves remain public. Thank you.
I was joking about the short game.
John Brinkley. Blacks are being whited out on TV. And that is a reality. I have some statistics here for you. Since 1998, ownership of TV stations by people of color has declined 40%, with the number of stations owned by African Americans declining nearly 30%. That's just since 1998. Cities with large black populations, such as New York, Los Angeles, Atlanta, have no black-owned TV stations. Most black-owned television stations do not even operate in African-American communities, but instead are concentrated in the Midwest. Black-owned stations reach less than 8.7% of the black population. The percentage of people of color working on local TV stations dropped from 24% in 2001 to 18.1% in 2003. There has been no significant increase in these numbers since 1990. This is contained in a brochure that has other information that I give to the panelists and to the FCC. I represent the Tri-State Save Like It Is Coalition, which as a case in point, we just look at the treatment of the most popular, longest-running, lack-produced public affairs program that provides real information. The panelists spoke about how our image is projected around the world, how real news that you can use is being subverted through buffoonery and playful entertainment information. Like It Is, we went to the station, we looked in the public file. There is more than 10 feet of files with letters of support, letters saying how great the program is. For other programs, there's less than an inch. It's a popular program. We, as Lisa Davis stated, we sent more than 1,500 letters that were signed by people all over the tri-state area supporting Like It Is. The station, ABC, none of the stations are responsive to the communities that they serve. We asked the FCC to put some weight on them, enforce the public service doctrine that you, enforce the fairness doctrine that you have. These stations are out of control. It's your responsibility to get them back into control.
Good evening, I'm Lindsay Rodriguez, representing Encuente, a youth and community development organization. We are pleased that some television stations have made it clear that the city of New York is a majority of people of color. But that message has not gotten to the radio stations and newsrooms who are overwhelmingly white male dominated. We find it difficult to understand that when TV and radio stations are interviewing for national, state, or city policy, that there are no Latinos with the understanding, knowledge, or opinion required for these stations. We are in utter dismay to find top radio and TV stations with virtually no people of color in their station, in their stations. We are here this evening because we are proud to have been the first public high school for human rights in America, El Puente Academy for Peace and Justice, a nationally recognized public high school dedicated to promoting human rights and one of the top 200 academically achieving schools. Our youth have been empowered to believe they can make a difference. The question is, does the FCC believe they can? We see the FCC's presence here tonight as an opportunity to inspire our young people to believe and contribute to our media, our public, our nation. As you already know, Commissioners Jonathan Adelstein and Michael Copps, there must be an improvement in the way TV and radio stations serve the news and informational needs of people of color. And we appreciate you are here this evening. Diversity of viewpoints, local news coverage and reporting, programming, and Latino representation is not only essential, but long, long overdue. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Anita Hollander, the East Coast National Chair of AFTRA and Performers with Disabilities. I represent 54 million Americans with disabilities who reach across all diversity lines, who are virtually invisible in the media. I've been fortunate enough to work myself in radio and TV in New York and Boston, but I am unusual among performers with disabilities. Performers with disabilities find it hard enough to get employed in general, but when employment becomes more limited due to less local hires, then the prospects for performers and people with disabilities becomes even more bleak. In the media, loss of jobs means loss of voice. We end up with a twofold problem. We have performers with disabilities' voice, which becomes non-existent, and employment for people with disabilities becoming non-existent. But this monopoly game does not make any sense in general, because when jobs dry up, money dries up, nobody buys anything, the economy fails, capitalism doesn't work, and the country collapses, as in 70 years ago with the Great Depression. Personally, I trained in college to work in this industry. Now, my daughter wants to go to college, and I want to be able to pay for that by working in the industry which I trained for and which I have been making a living at. This monopoly is both personally and publicly simply the road to hell.
My name is Agustina Perez. I'm here to speak on behalf of the 1,800 individuals who signed a petition for the investigation of the Hispanic Latino broadcasting under obscenities, profanities, and indecent broadcasts. The broadcasted material on some of these radio stations is despicable, vulgar, and obscene. Case in point, we have on Basilón de la Mañana, radio station WSKQ. This program, broadcasted over the public waves, is permeated with media molesters and media predators. They have injected their own venomous vocabulary and innuendos. El Basilón de la Mañana is 5 continuous hours of sexual filth. Phone lines are open. The public is invited to share their discussions and opinions. For example, September 29, 25 minutes of long drawn out discussion on how to arouse a woman in bed. On October 16, a man caller explaining in detail the act of having sex with a pet monkey and its pleasures. Sick. Gentlemen, sick. Learning comes from hearing of the word. Our children, especially our teens, are hearing, learning, and repeating. Where is the serious literary? Where is the scientific? Where is the political or artistic value in this profanity? Their views are that that's how we Hispanics, when we get together, speak and talk and act. That most listeners like this type of programming because it's funny. They're confusing filthiness with funny.
All right.
The owners that allow this broadcast on the air, the sponsors that back them up, and these charlatan DJs are only today's Judases. In their frenzy for riches, power, popularity, and ratings, they humiliate the dignity of the persons. They humiliate our honor. They sell our dignity and our moral values. And they sell the good virtues, our Hispanic heritage. Thank you.
Allison Joy Fauner, and I'm the co-founder of Reach Hip Hop, a national organization that strives to utilize hip hop as a tool for education, social, and political justice while fighting for media justice. We talked earlier at the top of the evening about how the United States now has 300 million people in it, which is why I think that it's very sad that tonight's discussion is completely disregarding the impact that media has on our youth, and there are no or hardly any youth representatives. I love music and I love hip hop. However, every time I turn on the radio to listen to radio stations that claim they are, quote, where hip hop lives, I do not recognize the culture I grew up with. All I hear is programming that continues to promote systemic divide and conquer techniques, feeding people of color audiences, mostly youth, a diverse array of internalized racism, sexism, and homophobia. Hip hop was created and born during a time of oppression, and with that oppression came great expression that embodied a whole community that rocked the mic, cut up 2 turntables, threw up tag, and b-boyed, b-rolled on hard concrete. We took up space when gentrification was pushing us out of our neighborhoods. We told our stories when the mainstream silenced us. This way of expression lifted up our spirits and empowered our community, and it was so powerful that it became more than just an art form, but a culture of resistance that uplifted and changed the world. So when I turn on the radio today on radio stations like MS Own Hot 97 or Clear Channel Own Power 105 that call themselves hip-hop, I don't hear anyone uplifting our communities, nor do I think I or other misrepresented people are empowered. All I hear is the dissemination of racist stereotypes and the promotion of misogyny, homophobia, and violence. How do I, as a young person of color, identify with a white-owned and run radio station that oppresses and misrepresents our communities? Every day I look at other young people around me, and it is quite evident how music has great effects on all of us. All I see is young people disrespecting each other and making jokes about each other's cultures and emulating what they hear.
You still winding down?
Yes. We know that media plays a large role in socialization, and we cannot blame only artists who put out this kind of music or DJs that play it, but we must look to the program directors, general managers, and owners of these radio stations that allow it to happen or even encourage these racist jokes, sexist comments, and violence to promote ratings, get paid, and maintain institutionalized power hierarchies. I want to see youth be empowered by hip-hop culture like I know it can be. The ownership of that culture belongs to us, and we will reclaim it by any means necessary. We are not asking, we are demanding, and if change does not come, we will take it.
My name is Kai Yu, and I'm speaking on behalf of 40 community-based organizations, many in this New York region. It is called the Coalition Against Hate Media, whose mission is to promote diversity and fair representation in the media. For several years, we have worked to hold broadcasters responsible and accountable for airing messages of hatred and bigotry into our communities. FCC deregulation has allowed big media to grow larger. It has weakened the community's ability to challenge broadcasters and to open a dialogue with them on the local needs and interests of our communities. Instead, it has allowed corporate media to ignore our demands to even meet to resolve incidents in which radio hosts make racist and obscene comments. It has also crowded out minority and women-owned media and limited our choice and ability to inform our constituencies on matters important to our communities. Recently, we responded to a Clear Channel-owned station in New York City in which DJ Star of the Star and Buck Wild show threatened violence and sexual molestation of a child, and used anti-Asian slurs. This station is also known for using epithets against the N-word, the B-word, etc. DJ Star was fired, but the action was far from sufficient. Clear Channel executives ignored requests to meet with community leaders. They have since not been held accountable for hiring DJ Star, who is known for hatred and bigotry. In another incident several years ago, these hosts called a South Asian woman a filthy rat eater, a bitch, and threatened to choke the F out of her on the air.
You're still winding down.
The company has not been held responsible or accountable for the years in which they have denigrated minorities and women-owned media. We urge the FCC to reinstate policies that would compel companies to meet with community leaders, to strengthen mechanisms that allow the community to challenge broadcast licenses, and to increase the penalties for FCC violations. There is precedence for this in FCC rules and regulations. Moreover, we urge you to foster increased minority ownership by women and minorities. In closing, access to diverse sources of information is the foundation of a democratic society. So we urge you to foster diversity and localism in the broadcast media. The FCC must fulfill its mandate to ensure that media companies use the public airwaves for the public interest. Thank you.
My name is Wayne Walcott, representing the Critical Thinkers Association. I was born in the Caribbean, grew up thinking I was a West Indian, but my love for history taught me a whole lot. It taught me some truth. We are not Indians, and we are not West Indians. We are Africans in the West.
All right.
Latino, Hispanic, niggas, it's all the same. It has nothing to do with who these people are. The Latino, the people who consider themselves Latino and Hispanics are the true citizens of this region.
When you see this immigrant team coming through here in the last day, coming to Texas, and they have this new immigrant, these are the native people. These are the people that are coming here. The media report is, we all use this colonial mentality that the media express. Ever since colonialism, we've been having the same nonsense. It's now getting tighter and tighter around us. If we look around today at media control, I always thought the FCC was a fair-minded organization. FCC is only fair when it comes to concern big money. They are controlled by the big money. This is why conglomerates control the media, whether it's press, TV, radio. FCC is part and parcel of all of this. We hope it will be different, but it can only be different when the people take control. And this goes from the government down, the people have to take control. This is not a democracy. This is fooling you to think this is a democracy. Again, you believe the media and the act that they give you. Elections coming around, it's a democratic right to go and rule, to go and vote, and the votes not counted, and all this kind of nonsense is a whole crack club. All right. The media control the minds of the people, right? Yes, okay. The media control the minds of the people so much that the biggest disaster in this country took place in New York. We still have to believe that Al-Qaeda or some foreign people came here to it when this was an inside job. The media is not explaining to people. The country is paying something like what, $1 billion a month for what is happening in Iraq. The media not exposing these. Now, FCC as a controlling factor must take control. Unless we stay in this country, the colonial mentality in the FCC must be changed. Thank you.
Greetings. My name is Ollie McLean. I'm a candidate for Congress, running for Congress in the 11th Congressional District in Brooklyn. I just have to say, prior to the Democratic primary of September 12th, the candidates were all on the media. Those candidates that ran in the Democratic primary, they were on the TV, they were on the radios, they were everywhere. Since the primary, where we have, I would just like to interject, that we had a governor and a mayor that called certain one of them the congressperson. Since that time, when there was a mix-up, because I was on the ballot before the primary as an independent, the community drafted me to run because they felt that I have their vision. I know what it is that they need. I lived 40 years in this district, and I have represented them on many occasions. Since that time, all media has shut down for Ollie McLean. Those candidates, they were on Channel 4, they were on Channel 7, they were on LIB, they were on they were on KISS FM and other stations. The community had written FCC many letters asking them to open the airwaves to them because they feel that my candidacy will represent them. That has never happened. I'm here now to ask you, because I'm really disappointed that the other members of the FCC are not here to hear what the people have to say. These are our airwaves. You might own the station, but these are our airwaves, and we must have access. Whoever controlled the media controlled the vision, and we cannot let that happen. We must have you open the airwaves for free and open discussion, as it should be. I thank you very much.
My name is Saul McCants. I'm first a parent. I'm an educator. Even though the board ed will never hire me because I teach the truth. I also am a lifelong Met fan, so tonight me being here is very important.
That's right.
So please, I need you to take out your notes because I'm going to go on to what media conglomeration is. All right? NBC, which owns MSN, which owns Hotmail. All right? You had a lady here talking this crap about stuff on the internet. Well, if you're poor, your email is going to be in the library. MSN has the contract for people who have emails and students that have emails in the library and are paid by the government. Okay? Two, Bloomberg. on Channel 7, on everywhere else, he has his little strip running mate, even though he's the mayor. He's still, that's part of the media. Three, ABC, okay? Now that we got a few of the big ones in there, we had a trial on Lynn Stewart. I was there at the sentencing, okay? The media tries to manufacture and has been left out voices that are critical and think properly, don't look thuggish when you're asked for an opinion on the news. That's why when you see a story in the news, you see the story took place during the daytime, but they found a person that looks like it's nighttime, because they had to find a hip-hop that was dropped out of school and can't talk properly and will manufacture consent for the opinions and so on. I meant to leave out Giuliani. And what the media has done is, when Giuliani, all these people in these big cars, they don't want to see black people screeching their windows, he made them disappear, the media has begun to follow suit. Okay, that's what that mentality is that you're seeing. So you don't see us in the media. I was, somebody turned to the reporters on the media, asked me a question, answer a question about the trial. Once I said, this trial was bogus charges, why don't you do an investigative report on the money the government wasted and didn't spend on New York City schools? The mic was turned off. Now, I have no other way to deal because I'm wrapping it up. MSN has censored my email, cut it off for political content for 50 people on my list who are part of my PTA. That's media conglomeration. And that's the illegality. And plus, the attorney says that corporations don't have to abide by the First Amendment. I got a problem with that. I'm a son of a vet. My father's in the grave fighting for this country, and you got people talking about the First Amendment don't count for corporations. Tax dollars, I'm a taxpayer. Election's coming, and believe me, I'm walking the street. I'm a New Yorker, all right? And 9/11 was an inside job as far as I'm concerned.
My name is Mariela Rosario. I'm representing the Manhattan Neighborhood Network Youth Channel. Since its inception in March of 2000, the Youth Channel has trained hundreds of young people through the metropolitan area media literacy and production. By collaborating with youth-based organizations, public schools, and cultural institutions, we've become a hub for youth-produced media and a national leader in education with regards to media ownership, messaging, and production. Our youth-produced programming centers on important and timely social issues such as immigration, sexual health, and incarceration, and we've received local and national recognition. Youth Channel prepares the next generation of New Yorkers to be media producers and analysts, and not just passive consumers. The Youth Channel is slated to become the first channel ever created in the United States where media made by youth for youth would air 24/7. Unfortunately, this vision has been held back to a programming block of 17 hours a week on Time Warner, Channel 34 and RCN 83 in Manhattan. Youth Channel is still in pursuit of its original goal and would like to obtain a fifth channel for public access television in New York that would house youth-produced programming. This youth channel would be accessible to all New York City residents and would serve to inform, educate, and entertain the youth of the city as well as train them in producing content for the channel. Only local media like public access and community radio have proven to be accessible tools for our marginalized communities to get their voices heard. There has been much discussion about creating media opportunities for disenfranchised communities, and we cannot afford to forget our youth. Many of them represent these very communities and stand to lose the most as this digital divide widens. A greater commitment needs to be made so that public schools gain and are able to sustain broadband capabilities and equipment that propel students into the digital and information age. Students should be taught how to think analytically and critically about this media. We should not feel powerless over our representation in the media, and we need to see reflections of ourselves that we can relate to and understand. In New York, youth are inundated.
Yeah, stop winding up.
Yeah, this is my last. In New York, youth are inundated in an ever more cluttered visual environment, and the media plays a crucial and vital role in our lives. It is in the public interest to listen profoundly to us and to our vision of tomorrow. The media provides a platform for debate and exchange. With all this consolidation, there has been a corresponding decrease in public access to airwaves. As a result, youth, minorities, and women are all shut out of America's most powerful industry. Broadcasters have an obligation to provide a space where everyone can have input into our public discourse. Before policy is set in stone that will impact the next generation, we hope that the FCC seeks to include their voice in framing this debate with regards to media ownership and representation.
Yeah.
everyone. My name is Ana Lourdes Alvarenga Silva. I am a Brazilian and therefore a very proud Latina. I'm coming here to testify my difficulties in portraying my community in a very monopolized market. I had trained with the Community Access Television, and I just want to testify like the importance of the Community Access Television to train and help people of color or different nationalities to give a true portrait of their community to the community in a whole. I would like to make you aware that big Brazilian challenges are coming here, and also like impoverishing our communities of independent producers by taking our market away and basically transforming the independent producers into their like publicity companies. Only like instead of producing content, we are becoming people that produce commercials for this big channel. I'm going to mention here Rede Globo Rede Globo TV, and also Record, and that is owned by a big religious group in Brazil. I also want to like thank you for this opportunity and tell you about your responsibility of making this work here in America, because as you know, other undeveloped countries and developing countries follow your trends, and whatever you can make here, and when you have a big responsibility on really fulfilling the rights of human rights and civil rights, and I hope that you can make it, because otherwise the developing countries will lose also their hope in several things. It's good to have your example to look upon. Thank you very much. Thank
you. My name is Billy Baby. My concern is not just with the media. My concern is with our human species. We have always been at war with each other. We kill each other. And on our planet, we are polluting and we are cancering each other more and more and more every single day. On the media, who's being held accountable for this? As much as I know, no one. We've got a criminal in the White House. I never heard the word criminal here tonight. We've got a criminal in the White House. I'm going to give you documentation about why this guy is guilty of being a war criminal and why he should be in jail right now.
You only have 2 minutes.
There's a book out. It's in your libraries. It's called American Dynasty. It's by a guy named Kevin Phillips. It's a history of the Bush family. The Bush family, his grandfather and his father, were partners with Adolf Hitler. It took Hitler many years to get into power. And every single year, the Bush family gave him $1 million. Why isn't that on the networks? Why isn't this guy impeached and put on trial, and when found guilty, be put in jail? You've got this information in your brain. Spread it all over the United States and all over the planet. If we don't do this, the only people we can blame is ourselves for what's happening. We
start wrapping up.
We cannot last on a planet that's polluted with all the weapons we got. We've got about just only 50% of the forest that we used to have 150 years ago. We've got a media monopoly with goddamn criminals in the media monopoly. Everybody from ABC and CBS are basically mentally enslaved.
Thank you. I guess it's a good note to end on. Thank you very much. Oh, you're right on. Thank you.
Hi, Lisa Bowers. I have a headache. and I'm director of organizing for public housing residents of the Lower East Side. The project and goals for the Lower East Side. Yes, I'm heading out. I'm still here tonight because I'm at work and my job is harder because I work with public housing residents. And, a lot of times when I say public housing, people got images in their heads, right? None of them are positive because the media is filled with negative images of public housing. And while public housing is at risk on a city, state, and federal level, we're losing funding. We reached out to popular news stations and newspapers, and they refuse. Or just seems our issues take a backseat. What's more important is, you know, what Britney Spears is wearing and, you know, what party to go to next. I'm here because we have a campaign called the Public Media and Print Media Campaign. We use that to dispel those negative images, perpetuate positive images of people, to challenge those horrible perceptions that people have of people in public housing, and to also educate residents. Thanks to public access, especially Manhattan Neighborhood Network, we've been able to do that. They have just been indispensable in our initiatives towards changing these negative images of people, residents of public housing, and I appreciate them. I have so many things to say, and in lieu of repeating everything, I applaud everyone for coming here. And we should just boycott. If the FCC doesn't want to do its job, we should boycott. Talking to between every one of those media platforms is a commercial. And we're not hitting them in their pockets. And, you know, we're not hitting them in their hearts. That's in their pockets. Letters don't hurt them, right? You can see hundreds of letters and petitions don't help anything. So let's start doing real action. Let's start, like people said, make program directors accountable. Boycott these corporations. Don't go to Dunkin' Donuts.
Okay,
and then also, this is a scary moment too for me because the FCC is trying to change the direction of the communication industry as a whole. Just last year they revamped how they do their broadcast with DSL, and now they're allowing telephone companies to do the same thing that internet services do. So, like a gentleman has said before me, and ISPs like Earthlink, they're gonna be out of business soon. Because while they overcharge people, Verizon has the luxury to have low prices. And by that time, they're gonna get rid of a couple companies like that. So that's what telecommunications. And now we're talking about the media for broadcast.
Thank you very much.
Hi, my name is Paula Zimmerman-Taylor. I'm an independent producer and trained by Manhattan Neighborhood Network. As this country moves toward a theocracy or dictatorship, it is vital to hear local, diverse points of view. The media is the lifeline of our communities, the way information comes to us, and the way we, especially creative artists, express ourselves. Now, since habeas corpus, the right of habeas corpus has been destroyed, we must express ourselves as long as we are free and also be the voice for those in prison. Marketers and affiliates in their rush and greed to sell brands are breeding and homogenizing and brainwashing young people so they will never think for themselves. They're being bombarded by useless information which is robbing their souls. As an independent woman producer, I am horrified by the lack of opportunity not only to make a living in this completely biased media climate, but also to get my work shown and distributed on any media outlets. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Nia Benyako, and I am chair of the WBAI's Local Station Board Programming Committee. I'd just like to say that WBAI is a wonderful sanctuary for independent voices to be heard.
Yeah.
I understand it is not perfect. I'm not paid by WBAI. I'm just a 20-year listener, and I'm the chair of the program committee. There were some things said tonight that were absolutely, well, let me just say that absolutely. Some of it was just not, as the woman said from ABC, not right. We need to get it right. I can tell you that I saw the grid. It was in an open forum. Like if you're familiar with WBAI, you know things are very open. It is absolutely not true that Latino programming, whatever that is, pertaining to Latino issues, will be cut. There, was an increase, and I am speaking the truth. And by the way, I am 50% Latina, so I just like to put that on the record. Also, I know I only have a minute that the woman said, is that about Like It Is. Like It is a wonderful program. It tells my story, and I would like to have it kept on the air. It is like a crack in the Berlin Wall, where we can get the truth out of a mainstream media that does not tell what the truth is. It doesn't get it right, to use your colleague's phrase there. So please, I am willing to have a dialogue with that woman. I wish if she were here. I can't see that far, but I'm sitting in the corner. She's more than willing to come and speak with me, and I will tell her, I will show her, I will reach out to her that way. But please, FCC, do not besmirch WBAI. We need WBAI. I can guarantee you that 80% of the people that sat in this auditorium tonight heard about this on WBAI. Do not do that, please, I beg you.
Good evening. My name is Jonathan Glass. I'm the Vice President with Council Trade Communications. We are a media and telecom investor who is an investor in a minority-owned broadcaster in Philadelphia, WWSI, which is a Spanish-language station and an affiliate of Telemundo. With wireless networks and spectrum becoming an increasing and growing component of content distribution, we're deeply concerned about the lack of minority ownership of wireless spectrum. As an example of this, if we look to the FCC's recent Auction 66, which raised $13.7 billion for the U.S. government, there were two minority-owned bidders listed as qualified bidders and two women-owned businesses listed as qualified bidders. And just one single woman-owned business was a winner of $385,000 of spectrum, a $13.7 billion auction. I think the FCC really needs to focus on ways to encourage ownership, both on the media side and the wireless side, for minorities and small businesses, where small businesses were just 4% of the dollar value of Auction 66. Thank you very much. And one other point I'd like to raise is, I think these meetings are really great, but they're not very well publicized.
Thank you.
On the FCC website. The Los Angeles one, I heard last night on Bill Moyer's show, that it was only 3 days before the actual forum that there was any information about it. And we happened upon a press release which of this particular meeting. I think going forward, the next 10 meetings across the country, or whatever it's going to be, need to be put up on the FCC's website, which is a great website. And thank you very much, and thanks for carrying us out this late hour.
Thank you. Also, is there anybody here who's sitting down who wishes also to testify? If you could just get online and we'll take it from there, okay? Anybody else? Okay, great.
My name is Ed Marshall. I'm with the Tri-State Like It Is Support Coalition. And my reason for being here, first of all, I want to thank you, Commissioner Cobb, and I want to thank Commissioner Edelstein, who we have met before at St. John's University, and we've discussed our issues. Now, the Like It Is Support Coalition is based in Newark, New Jersey. I live and work in New York City, so I go out there to be with people who are actually functioning and trying to get things done and to reverse the trend. One thing that we developed was this pamphlet, and it sort of covers some of the information and some of the concerns that are genuine. But one thing we asked is a question: who owns the airwaves? And we say,
you do.
The general public does. The airwaves or spectrum are what radio and TV stations use to broadcast to your radio or TV. The airwaves belong to you in the same way that your sidewalks or parks do. They are public resource, okay? That's fine. But then at the very bottom, and I bore witness to this, we have something that Richard Parsons said on public television. He was at New York University Law School, and he was asked a question in reference to who owns the airwaves, and his statement was that, in theory, the public That is, I'll say it again, quote, in theory, the public owns the airwaves, end quote. He's thinking as, now here you have Richard Parsons, the chief executive officer of Time Warner, and this, to him, as any other head of a major corporation that controls the airwaves, is a theory. Now, what makes it a theory? And that's something for you to ponder, Commissioner Cobb. What makes it a theory for them? You can't do this job by yourself. I've seen you on C-SPAN. I've seen you on other panels. It's something that you're only 20% of that vote at the commission. But I think you've heard enough tonight to understand that you have a job and have a responsibility, and the focus is on you and Commissioner Edelstein to get the job done, because America's going to hell in a wastebasket. That's what's just happened. Okay? Thank you very much.